The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
On 2nd and 15, this one's pitched back the other way for the touchdown. It's Janoris Jenkins, a pick six.
Oh, welcome to the Pick Six Podcast Show, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host, joined by Ryan Wilson and John Breach, to dive into our signature show, the Sunday Night Recap. We're here. It happened. It's real. It's spectacular. Football was back. Week one was awesome. I don't even know how good the football was, guys. But I do know that Tom Brady, as you heard the Joe Buck call there from the Fox broadcast, Tom Brady got pick sixed by Janoris Jenkins. The Jackrabbit took it to the house. The Saints blew up the Buccaneers. We got that to talk about, plus a lot more. I know we had football on Thursday, but man, I mean, it felt really good to have that rush of 1 o'clock. Just everything's happening. Touchdown. Like, you're just texting like bananas things. It was fun to have it back. It felt a little normal and life was kind of good for a hot second there.
Yep. I'm with you. I mean, I actually got up pretty early and had to wait for the pregame show to start on HQ. Of course, the fantasy show was great and all the other channels. And you just were waiting for 1 p.m. And then once 1 p.m. got here, on the East Coast anyway, Breach, that's when the game started, you sort of felt like it was any other regular NFL start to the season. Only one team, ironically, the Jaguars had fans, but you couldn't tell. A lot of tight shots, and you were just focused on the football. I don't know if it was a different experience for the players on the field in terms of being easier to hear things. I would imagine it is, and no, you know, adrenaline rush from the crowd. But I would imagine Janoris Jenkins had a pretty good adrenaline rush, pick six in there, Tommy Brady, and he probably felt pretty good about that sashay into the end zone.
Is it funny that Jacksonville was the only team with a crowd and they won? So, like, home field advantage 1-0. Kansas City home field advantage 2-0. It's getting up there. Fans in the crowd.
That's what the similarities are between those two teams.
Are you kidding me? That's Jacksonville. Kansas City's gonna be the AFC Championship game, Ryan. Don't be ridiculous.
It's actually not that far-fetched. Jacksonville is kind of intriguing. We'll get to that in a second.
Let me say this quickly, though. We, for months, were talking about how terrible the Jaguars were. I feel comfortable in saying that the Jaguars are no longer the worst team in the NFL, and it may not even be close. I'll just leave it there.
The Jets?
The Jets, the way they played, and it wasn't
Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. By the way,
I was trying to tease it, and you jumped right in.
Okay. Well, you could have said, like, I'll tell you who is the worst team in the NFL.
Yeah, Ryan, it sounded more like you were just going to give it away rather than tease.
Yeah. That's what I'm
good. You just,
Cam Jordan, Saints pass rusher, was asked after the game about the weirdness of having no fans in the Superdome and said, it felt like we were at a Tampa Bay game. someone hit the laugh button, but I forgot I deleted it.
Oh, you have to hit the dunk on button for that one, I think.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Kevin Harlan.
By the way,
speaking of teasers, we may have some more Kevin Harlan sound coming up later. That's a little teaser for
also,
you.
Guess what, Cam Jordan?
Is it Kevin there. Harlan saying Matthew?
We'll tell you later. You'll find out. You said Breach, do you know what game Kevin Harlan was on? If you do, then you can guess what the sound is.
I love that Breach is yelling at me about not teasing Will, and he just answers the question to your Kevin Harlan thing. By the way, Cam Jordan's teammate, Jameis Winston, formerly of Tampa Bay, so I probably hurt his feelings.
How about, I tweeted it out. I don't know if you saw it. Did you guys catch the shot of Jameis Winston on the sideline with the Microsoft server?
I saw your very mean tweet.
He's like holding it. He's like looking around like, nobody walk over here and look to see if this surface is on, please. Like, he's like,
not the saddest.
He's like candy crushing or something.
Not the saddest candid of a backup quarterback today, by the way.
Who's the then they also panned over and Jameis was drinking the tea, that meme after Brady threw the pick six.
Was he?
No, he wasn't, but he should have been.
I'm gone, but still
plenty of turnovers.
Let's dive into that game specifically. So,
hey, the saddest quarterback, backup quarterback that John just steamrolled, yes. Josh Rosen.
Oh, that's true. the Saints beat the Buccaneers 34-23. I got to tell you, because this was a 425 game, we'd already seen Cam Newton in a Patriots uniform. We'll get to that game in a minute, of course. Tom Brady in a Bucs uniform wasn't quite as jarring as I thought it would be. I thought he looked clean. I thought he looked fresh. But I also thought he looked like he switched teams after playing for one team in 20 years in a pandemic offseason. Because while Brady was sharp at various points, it's very clear that he and Bruce Arians, they made some good throws. That first drive was awesome. And it led with Tom Brady plunging in for a touchdown run. It is actually the first time in Tom Brady's career that he ran for a touchdown on his team's season opening drive. This is also the first game with two starting quarterbacks in their 40s. Brady, obviously, 43, and he's the oldest player in NFL history to score a touchdown. Now he keeps breaking his own record over and over again. But I don't know that he looked great. So, Ryan, how would you grade or how would you judge Tom Brady's performance in his first game as a Tampa Bay Buccaneer?
I'll give him a C+, and I'm not giving him a C+ in a vacuum, and we'll talk about it later. But Cam Newton had zero struggles, so that's something to consider. We're talking about two quarterbacks coming to new programs, new teams, and then not playing up to the level for one that we expected, and maybe the other one exceeded our expectations. But for Tom Brady, a couple things. He and Mike Evans were clearly not on the same page at any point in that game. Late, they had a touchdown. It didn't really matter at that point. There were a lot of stupid mistakes, and Bruce Arians talked about this. Not just
by the way, it's funny you should mention that they weren't on the same page, because on that pick six, and the interception with Bruce Arians on a crosser, I mean, with Mike Evans on a route, mm-hmm. Bruce Arians actually criticized him after the game.
One was a miscommunication between him and Mike, and he thought Mike was going down the middle. It's a different coverage. Mike read it right, and he should have bent across his face, but Tom just overthrew it. And the other one was it was a screen pass with an outlet called, and he threw the outlet, and it was a pick six. Bad decision. Mm. It came out lighting up. We go.
Well, here's something worth noting. In the days leading up to the season opener, Bill Belichick could say nothing but nice things about Cam Newton. In 20 years, he never said one nice thing about Tom Brady. Brady comes to Tampa Bay, and immediately Bruce Arians is throwing him under the bus. That first interception, it looked like Mike Evans made the mistake, but it also looked like if Mike Evans had done what Tom Brady wanted him to do, that ball still would have been overthrown. And that Janoris Jenkins pick that we've talked about now a couple times was a terrible throw. Even if that was the only read, he threw it behind. I don't know if Mike Evans was out on that route or not. Maybe he was. Either way, it was a terrible throw, terrible decision. So not a great start by Tom Brady. You mentioned he made some throws. Of course he did. He's Tom Brady. But he got outplayed by Drew Brees, who also didn't necessarily have a great game. And Sean Payton, I guess, got outcoached Bruce Arians, but there were a ton of mistakes. And I'll mention one last thing for Breach Talks. We were all super pumped about Tristan Wirfs being drafted to protect Tom Brady. He got worked by Cam Jordan, and it's not Tristan Wirfs' fault. That's going to happen, but the offensive line was a huge problem.
Ryan, are you grading Tom Brady on a curve? You're giving him a C+ when you said the interceptions were his fault, and he got outplayed by a guy who threw for 160 yards? Are you kidding me? Tom Brady gets a C- at best.
Wait a second. Team. C+ and you're dogging me. I'm going to give him a C-. Okay.
No, C- at best. I'm thinking more of the D range though.
Okay.
Here was my issue is that, yeah, we mentioned the touchdown on the opening drive, the series that you have scripted out like every team does. After that, Brady was horrible. I mean, their offense was totally disastrous after that opening drive. They punted. You had Brady's interception. They went halfway down the field, ended up with a blocked field goal. They punted again. Then they opened up the second half with the pick six. So, I mean, everything fell apart after the opening possession. And when you're playing a team like the Saints, it's going to score 30 or 40 points a game. You can't just fall apart after the opening possession. I thought Brady didn't look good. I mean, you take out that first series, which I think is fair because, again, that's the scripted series. When you had to start going into the flow of the game, Brady never got into the flow of the game. The Buccaneers were never in any sort of flow. They look disheveled. They look discombobulated. They look confused. I don't know what the deal was, but they didn't look like a good football team. So, again, Brinson, you said that they looked like a team that didn't get to practice together, that has a new quarterback, that had a shortened offseason during a pandemic, and that's what they looked like. So I don't think there's any need for concern if you're a Buccaneers fan, but I don't think Brady played well at all.
Wait a second. Can I ask a question? Either you can answer it. Maybe. I would be very concerned if I'm a Buccaneers fan because historically, Breach, do the Saints start fast or do the Saints start slow?
I mean, historically, they start slow, but again, they also are a team in a pandemic shortened offseason that was bringing back most of their starters. They're a team that benefited from half the offseason disappearing because they're not trying to gel and build team chemistry like the Buccaneers or a team like the Panthers or the Patriots.
Okay, fair enough. How about this? There were no crowd, no fans in the stands, so obviously the noise in the Superdome didn't really matter. The Buccaneers defense was the fifth best defense last year. They got dog whipped, it felt like, in the way they played down the stretch. Alvin Kamara went bonkers. Manny Sanders had a touchdown late. Mike Thomas didn't do a whole lot, didn't need to. Jared Cook was wide open on one of the passes late in the game to set up a touchdown. So, I mean, there are a lot of things to be concerned about, not just offensively and Tom Brady, if you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who had huge expectations. Some dummies on this podcast, I think it was just me, picked the Buccaneers to go to the Super Bowl.
I said to jam the Saints because the Saints are the better value because the Buccaneers are creating too much value. Look, I would say this. He was sacked three times. Tom Brady was. That's a lot. Tom Brady was only sacked three times in 20 years with the 83 times, only sacked 83 times in single right? Over the course of 20 years. He's played 283 games with the Patriots. He wasn't sacked three times very much over the course of that. I mean, it's, you know, far less than obviously 50%. And his first time with Tampa, granted against a good defense, but he was sacked a bunch. He was hit, according to NFL Jesus, the official NFL stat feed. He was hit, six quarterbacks hits by that Saints defense. What it reminded me of, and I said this leading up to it, so I feel a little vindicated. People didn't really listen. I also said smash the Saints. Thought it was one of the best bets. It reminded me of Peyton Manning in 2012 in his first couple of games with the Broncos. It felt like he just wasn't in sync. And obviously it's different because he'd had the neck surgeries. But remember, Manning came out and played that game. And I swear, I think it was a Monday night. It was a Monday night. Monday night in week two in the Georgia Dome against the Falcons. And they lost 27-21. And Manning finished with 24-37 for 241 yards, a touchdown, three picks, and like a 58.5 passer rating. And we were all wondering, is he washed? And I don't think we're wondering, is Tom Brady washed? But I do think it's fair to wonder what is going to be the acclimation period for when Tom Brady really starts rolling with this offense. Now, my guess would be that it would actually be 1 week because they get to play the Panthers next week and the Panthers defense is absolutely horrendous. So I wouldn't anticipate that the Buccaneers struggle much past next week, but I do think there'll be some bumps in the road. You're not going to be on the same page with Mike Evans. I mean, you saw that. It's just the nature of switching teams. It's the nature of this offseason. I think that if I was holding a Tampa Bay to win the NFC South ticket, I'd be panicking right now.
I don't know if I'd be panicking because they're going to be favored in their next four games, Panthers, Broncos, Chargers, Bears. And like we agreed upon, nobody expected big things out of the Buccaneers in week one when you only had 4 weeks of practice.
Wait a second. I thought we all felt like if anyone could overcome this adversity, in quotes, Tom Brady would be able to do that, especially when we're going to talk later in the show about Cam Newton, who no one had any expectations.
Ryan, don't include me with your royal wees. It was not we. I picked against the Buccaneers week one. I didn't think they would be gelled yet. I thought that it was going to take a couple weeks. And I think Brinson mentioned the best example, Peyton Manning. And I'm pointing out the schedule because I think that is where Tom Brady's going to look at it and be like, look, we're going to win a few of these next games. We'll go on a roll. The Broncos in 2012 started 2-3 and then ran off 11 wins in a row and finished 13-3. And the one thing I will say about Tom Brady, here's your fun fact of the podcast. It's coming 10 minutes in. Tom Brady is 14-4 in week one games. The other three losses, he made it to the Super Bowl that year. This is his fourth loss and he has made it to the Super Bowl every time he's lost in week one.
Let me ask this, and we can revisit it later, but who wins more games, Tampa Bay or New England?
I would take New England right now.
Tampa Bay.
Thank you. Come on.
You take Tampa Bay right now?
Yeah, I expected them to lose this game. I'm not jumping ship. Dolphins? I still think what?
The Jets and the Dolphins are terrible. Falcons and the Panthers might be terrible too, but I mean,
The Patriots play the Seahawks in week two and the Chiefs in week four. The Buccaneers are going to have a better record by week four.
I'll make that.
By the time week four is over, the Buccaneers will have a better record than the Patriots.
You it up.
We're dunking on them before. All right, what's the bet on that?
I don't know. What? You're already a game ahead on me. So odds in my favor.
What's that? No.
See, I thought they'd be in Breach's favor, don't
they? It has to be a better record. I don't want to hear this. Well, they had the same record, so it's sort of the same thing.
Well, the same record. They're going to catch them by the end of week four.
That's not the same thing. That's not the same thing as a better record.
All right, we'll
see. You think they'll win one more game by week four? What is
I said they could have a better record by week four, and I think they will absolutely catch them. So 2-2.
It'll be 3-1. I'm going Buccaneers 3-1, and the Pats will be 2-2. That's all you have to say.
Pats 4-0.
See, Wilson's on my side now, Brinson.
Okay. The Pats, look, what's your level 1 to 10 panic for the Bucs?
It's not low, because here's the thing. Bruce Arians said he was shocked by all the mistakes given how well they had practiced, and that's part of the reason, along with Tom Brady being Tom Brady, that I suspected they would come out. They could have lost that game, no big deal, but the way they played, they look like, I don't want to keep mentioning other teams we're going to talk about, but they look like the Lions out there. So, I mean, that's troubling. So that's the big thing for me. So on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm at a 6.5.
My panic level is 3.
All right.
I'm a 5. Firm 5. Whoa. I think they'll be good. They'll be fine, but it is concerning. We would be rude if we didn't mention that the Saints look awesome.
Well, as Breach pointed out though, Drew Brees didn't look great.
Yeah.
Alvin Kamara looked
fantastic. Drew Brees, 18 of 30, 160 yards, 2 touchdowns. Taysom, a waste of time, Hill, according to Pete Briscoe, 1 carry for 38 yards. Alvin Kamara, 12 carries, 16 yards. The Bucs' run defense was good again for a touchdown, and he also caught 5 catches for 51 yards and a touchdown shortly after receiving that $75 million extension. He looked fantastic. He might be on pace for like a Christian McCaffrey style season.
Yeah, he makes Christian McCaffrey type money. So that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Taysom Hill had 1 throw for 38 yards and then also had 3 carries for 13 yards. The Saints offense was not explosive. Mike Thomas, 5 catches, 3 catches on 5 targets, 17 yards, also got hurt. So not a great offensive effort for the Saints, but they still put up 34 points. They took care of business. They did what they had to do.
7 of those points came courtesy of Janoris Jenkins.
Well, I mean, if your defense scores 7 for you, you can be a little,
No, I'm not taking anything away from the offense. My point is that, you know, maybe the problem isn't the quarterback. Maybe the problem is it's just cursed to be quarterback in Tampa Bay.
I will say this. The Saints had 17 offensive points at halftime, or 17 points at halftime. I don't know what I'm calling offensive points. 24 at the end of the third quarter. And like they scored a touchdown. They scored the pick 6 coming out of the halftime. And then the only other touchdown they scored was that Emmanuel Sanders touchdown. The defense just kind of kept it on lock. So good for them. If the Saints have an elite defense, this is going to be a really good team.
Also, and we talked about this a little bit with the Jalen Ramsey deal. If Marshawn Lattimore keeps playing like we saw glimpses of on Sunday, he's going to be talking about Jalen Ramsey money.
As I told you before, as soon as the Ramsey deal happened. All right. Speaking of New England and the Patriots beat the Dolphins 21-11. The Patriots -7 or -6.5. One of my best bets. Cash it. And the under 41.5 hit very easily. Cam Newton, according to CBS Fantasy Scoring, was the top fantasy player in this game with 25 points. I got to say, I mean, if we're going to be comparing Cam and Tom Brady all season long.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Cam won week one. He was outstanding.
Wasn't even close.
Is it blew him away? He was great. And, you know, I thought about this. I was talking with Grant Danny on 106.7 The Fan in D.C. the other day. It's kind of amazing that we never – so, like, anybody who was going to replace Tom Brady at any point over the last 10 years, whether it's Jimmy Garoppolo or Jared Stidham, whoever it was, they're always going to have to deal with this weight of being Tom Brady's successor. Cam Newton doesn't have that for some reason. Like
an MVP.
I know, but that's kind of a big deal. So whoever's next, whoever's the eventual long-term guy in New England next is not going to be Tom Brady's replacement. Cam has effectively bridged the issue there. Like, you don't ever have to replace Tom Brady. You're just the next guy after Cam. Like, it's huge for the huge for the Patriots. They don't have to, nobody has to live up to Tom Brady's, Tom Brady's footsteps.
Breach ain't talking about. No one could replace Ken Anderson when the Bengals are stinking. You know, you're just worried about having a crappy quarterback at some point. So yeah, I get it, but
I mean, I think, also Ken Anderson, not Tom Brady, but sure.
But he was good. Those were good teams. My point is that you go far enough down the line.
Quarterback of all time. Is he? He's not even in the Hall of Fame, is he?
He should be. But we don't. That's a different podcast.
Yeah.
That's
my point is that.
Different podcast that we'll have next offseason.
My point is that Cam Newton, probably there are a few quarterbacks that could come after Tom Brady and not be worried about it. Cam Newton's one of them. But even if Jarrett Stidham sucks next year, if Cam Newton goes somewhere else, whatever, you're still going to be like, yeah, Tom Brady was so awesome. We miss him.
Ryan, you say that Cam Newton is one of those quarterbacks that come after Tom Brady and not worry about it. I think he was literally the only one out there that the Patriots could have. There was no, you know, like you bring in Andy Dalton, he's going to collapse under the pressure of playing after Tom Brady. You bring in Nick Foles, same thing happens. You bring in Cam Newton, Cam does not care because he's Cam Newton. He just has his own style, does his own thing. And, you know, I love the way the Patriots designed the offense around him. I didn't think Cam Newton obviously had a better day than Tom Brady, but it felt like, you know, he left throws out there. I'm sure McDaniels and Belichick are going to sit down and say, hey, look, you know, if you would have hit this throw instead of tucking up and running or instead of hitting the check down guy, maybe we scored two more touchdowns. So the fact that they won with him still kind of taking baby steps in this offense is really kind of mind blowing. And they were good offensively, defensively. I thought this was one of the most impressive wins just because there was all this talk about how the Dolphins are going to be this team that sneaks up on everyone and maybe be that dark horse contender in the AFC East. And the Patriots shut that down pretty quickly.
Yeah. In fact, Breach and I talked about this Friday on CBS Sports HQ, and I picked the Dolphins to cover that 6.5, and I actually thought they'd win the game.
It was actually, they were actually kind of close to covering.
They played terribly. And
they stunk, but like J.C. Jackson intercepted Fitzpatrick in the end zone with them.
That's a huge problem. Ryan Fitzpatrick cannot play like Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Tua's going to be in by week 5.
But we don't know. Whatever. That's not a terrible idea. But I mean, he has to play better as an old person who apparently went to Harvard. You can't throw 3 interceptions and play the way he did. Devontae Parker, I think, had a hammy at some point. So that's huge development. Big thanks for Sammy Watkins, whatever. But I mean, look, they spent $200 million in the offseason on players. 3 of the guys came over from New England, Van Noy, chief among them. They got Byron Jones. They drafted 50 guys that should help right away. And they were just housed from start to finish. Again, the offense had a lot to do with it. But, to Breach's point, Cam Newton, it was a balanced offense. They ran the ball a lot, 15 rushes for Cam. He threw the ball only 19 times, completed 15 of those. The only thing I would say, and clearly his foot and his shoulder look great, I don't know if I want him taking a ton of hits. Did he run in 2 touchdowns? Yeah, he ran 2 touchdowns in. And, I don't need him taking huge hits. He's healthy. Let's keep him healthy. I know the offense will probably morph and change and all that. 2 other things. They address 5 running backs, which is hilarious. And they still don't have a wide receiver, but maybe that doesn't matter outside of Julian Edelman.
The Patriots possessions, here they are. 4 minutes, 48 seconds, 6 minutes, 11 seconds, 2 minutes, 30 seconds. That was the 2 minutes and 30 seconds. That was a 3-play -2-yard drive. They went -2 yards in 2.5 minutes. 1 minute and 40 seconds. They went 3 plays, 9 yards, 30 seconds. They picked off Ryan Fitzpatrick and then kicked a field goal before half. 4:46, 7 minutes, 48 seconds, 5 minutes, 8 seconds, and then 1 minute, 28 seconds, with the last one being taking knees to ice the game. This, again, I'm not trying to take a victory lap here because it's 1 week and that's stupid. That's something Pete Prisco would do. But I feel vindicated in what I thought the Patriots were going to do, and they did it. They want to be a power run, eat up the clock, use Cam Newton's legs, and play great defense and force teams to try to beat them to get in a position where, so like when you get Ryan Fitzpatrick down 10 against the Patriots defense, it's a bad spot. He's going to force some balls. And the Patriots.
Well, one thing I would say, they had 8 guys opt out. So the defense wasn't supposed to be the same.
I know, but it's Bill Belichick cooking up a defense. Yeah, cooking up good players. That was Fitzpatrick's, by the way, 6th career game with 0 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. 3 of those 6 have come against Bill Belichick and the Patriots. They're going to get to play Sam Darnold and the hapless Jets twice. Lord. They're going to play Josh Allen twice, and we'll talk about the Bills in a minute, but Josh Allen not there yet as an elite passer. Okay, we can talk about it.
But they also have to play the Seahawks, the Chiefs, the 49ers, the Rams, the Ravens. It's not a completely easy schedule.
No, it's not a free schedule. It never is. It's the NFL. But, and look, let's take the time to throw a little shade at our boy, Brady Quinn, who came on this podcast last Tuesday and said, I was like, So do you think McDaniels, you know, he drafted Tebow. He's going to unleash this offense. And Cam's going to be great. He's going to be running all over the place. He's like, they're not even going to run it. They're dead. What going to do? I promise you, Josh McDaniels doesn't have that playbook.
And you know what the crazy thing about that is?
Trying to jump in.
I want to hear your Brady Quinn talk to your Pete Briscoe.
And Jerry Jones is an observer.
What's that?
Jerry Jones is an observer.
Yeah. You know who stinks? Who's that? I'll tell you who stinks. It's that Brinson. That's who stinks.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Was that pretty good? That was pretty good, right?
Yeah, it made me laugh. That was a good laugh.
I just don't get, like, there was no way Cam Newton wasn't going to be running the ball. Otherwise, you start Jared Stidham or Brian Hoyer. You're not going to take out this huge part of what his game is. That's part of his skill set. Like, you're literally, that's like asking a Drew Brees to play with his left hand tied behind his back and he got to run around
Brady played for Josh McDaniels. So like you sort of take your word for him. Like you think he's, you know, I don't know, but that Cam ran 15 times for 75 yards, 2 touchdowns.
I understand and I'm fine with what happened in terms of the game plan, but is that too much for Cam to be running the football? He led the team in rushing.
I think he leads the team in rushing almost every week. I think this is
until he gets hurt. And then what are you doing?
I think it's okay as long as he's not taking the hits. Like Russell Wilson's one of the smartest quarterbacks. He runs all over the place, always slides. Lamar Jackson, he's about 50-50. He's taking hits and sliding. But Cam Newton's so big, he thinks he can just run people over, and he keeps trying to do that. And it's just like, Cam, look, we know you're knocking that guy down, but that's going to take a toll on you. Your body's already beat up. You just can't keep doing that. Just run out of bounds. If you don't know how to slide, just fall down.
I would like to push back on that a little bit.
All right.
What injury has Cam Newton ever sustained while rushing down the field?
No, the point is he's already been injured. So if you re-injure your shoulder taking a hit while you're running, that's where it comes into play. Fine.
He's injured his shoulder taking hits in the pocket or when he tried to tackle somebody to pick six, and he injured his foot against the Patriots last preseason while in the pocket when he got stepped on. And I've maintained this for a long time. I know what you're saying. Like the more you rush, the more you're putting yourself at risk. But, like, I don't think that Cam, the way that he's built physically and the way that he runs, he's at risk if he's in the pocket getting hit by, like, defensive ends and defensive tackles. He ain't getting hurt when he's running into a cornerback. He's 4 times bigger. Like, he's way bigger than that cornerback.
He's older and as brief points out.
It's possible. But I do think – I don't think 15 rushes is outrageous.
That's a lot.
I don't think 15 rushes is outrageous. Yeah, I do agree with you there. And I want to say one thing real quick to compare Cam to Tom Brady. I actually think the Patriots had an easier time getting Cam ready for this offense than the Buccaneers would with Brady. Because with Brady, you're a one-trick pony. You have to throw the ball. He's not going to be – yeah, exactly. So you have to have that timing down. Whereas McDaniels can sit Cam down and look, we want to have you timed in. We want to have you – so that you have good chemistry with these receivers. But if you don't, then take off and run. You know, like that's not an option with Tom Brady. So that puts Cam Newton almost a step ahead of whatever the Buccaneers are trying to do. So I don't think it's that surprising. I mean, what did he rush for, 5 yards? We forgot to mention him.
Jones actually played okay. But, yes, that's a good point, John.
By the way, if Cam averages 15 rushes per game over the course of 16 games, that's 240 rushes. That would shatter his previous career high rushing attempts of 139. I just think when you go back and look at these rushes, it's not like they were all high-impact stuff.
He took a couple big hits. I think on both touchdown runs he got hit.
You're always going to take a big hit on the touchdown run, for sure. Cam pushes the envelope on the touchdown run, no doubt about it. He took some big shots there. But I'm saying like on these other ones, he was basically doing a read option and getting out and then sliding down or like
perfect
picking the first down. I think they're just really picking their spots where they do it. And in my opinion, they will operate this offense and maintain this style of play for the next month or so. The over-under against the Seahawks, 44. Love the under. I think Seattle comes out conservative in that game.
Let me tell you something. This offense, as you said, might last a month. It might last 6 more days because Jamal Adams is going to light his ass up and then they're going to have some conversations. What are you talking about?
Jamal Adams doesn't want that smoke, son.
Ooh, we'll see. We'll see about that.
And if Cam does average 75 yards a game, you know what he's going to end up with?
75 times 16.
1,200. You know what that would be? The most rushing yards by any quarterback in the NFL. Boom. Just tally up that bold prediction right now.
I love that Breach raises the roof on some random fact.
Yeah, it's like week one raising the roof on a prediction.
I thought you guys were going to bring up me raising the roof on Andy Dalton week one last year. NFL records coming.
All right, moving. Oh, wait, I forgot. By the way, we're doing all these games with no fans and everything.
Yeah.
We talked about that a little bit. You know who else talked about that? Bill Belichick.
What was the atmosphere like in the stadium without fans there? Can you compare it to anything else that you've experienced in your football life?
Practice.
Oh, my God. What a fantastic. It took me a second to register what he said. Practice. Great answer.
Practice. He just said deadpan practice. So, and like the beginning part of the question got cut off, but he's like, Bill, you've been around football for years. And da, 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 da. He's like, practice.
I was actually thinking while the reporter was asking the question, maybe Belichick is better social distancing for press conference. Nah, still terrible.
He looks even worse. He's like, why am I on Zoom? What is happening?
And then after that, he said, cause the reporter was like, practice, like a little more than that. And he said it was like scrimmaging the Titans or scrimmaging Detroit. So I just think it's fascinating to hear a coach say it doesn't feel like a game. It feels like this weird thing we're doing out here in an empty stadium, especially a coach like Belichick.
That's a good point, Breach. Sunday night football, Rams 20, Cowboys 17. The Rams plus 2.5. They actually got to minus 1 right before close. And I think it actually swung a little bit back to maybe they were plus 1. It was flying all over the place late. There's a famous gambler who apparently hammered the Rams. Somebody who'd been like in jail with the FBI before. Name, it's like Billy Walters, maybe, I think is his name. Yeah, Billy Walters. He apparently unloaded on the Rams, and it caused the line to go from plus 3 all the way down to a pick 'em, but it didn't matter because the Rams won outright. The under 51.5 hit. Ezekiel Elliott, 24 points in fantasy. Malcolm Brown, 22 points. Dak Prescott, 19 points. The obvious question, well, I will point out first, the Rams look night and day better. And maybe the Cowboys defense stinks, but the Rams look a whole lot better. The big question, though, did Jalen Ramsey flop or did Michael Gallup commit offensive pass interference?
Breach, you go first because you had a similar incident in your other favorite game.
Well, I thought the call was absolute trash. I think and Breachbot 2000, Jerry Jones is paying me to say this. I thought that in that situation, it's late in the fourth quarter. We've all been missing football. The Rams have already benefited off of pass interference flags. They got to the Super Bowl 2 years ago. They don't need to benefit off of any more cheap pass interference flags. And I just thought in that situation, you don't throw that pass interference flag. I thought both guys were kind of jostling at each other kind of evenly. I absolutely thought Ramsey flopped. Just don't throw the flag. Just keep playing. See what happens. The Cowboys would have had what? Like first down at the 15-yard line, 30 seconds left or something? Just
down
do it.
Three. Chance.
Hey, Ryan, three. Ryan, would you be surprised to find out that Breach had Dallas minus 3 in our expert picks?
Oh! I did too. But he's right. That was a terrible call. That was an absolute terrible call. You can argue that the call in the Bengals game that we'll talk about later, that there's some wiggle room there. We talked to Brian McFadden HQ about it after on Sunday night, and he said, if I were a referee, Brian McFadden's a former defensive back, I would not have thrown that flag. And here's my question. Jalen Ramsey, the highest paid cornerback in the NFL, and rightly so. Why are you getting beat in the line of scrimmage with Michael Gallup and then flopping?
Gallup.
Yeah. And then flopping. That is, I mean, I will say this, terrible call, but that Dallas offense, dog doo-doo, man. The second half, five possessions, I think they had a field goal and that was it, a bunch of punts. Twice they turned the ball over on downs. The two possessions prior to that pass interference call, which was the last possession of the game for the Cowboys, was also a turnover on downs. Third and six, deep in the Rams' end. They run the ball with Zeke Elliott. Fourth and three, throw a pass short to CeeDee Lamb instead of kicking a field goal to tie it. I don't necessarily hate going for it on fourth and three, but have a play that goes more than 2 yards. So there are a lot of fingers to point. Part of me thinks that fourth and three going for it was Mike McCarthy going the exact opposite direction of Jason Garrett with the exact same result of just frustrating the crap out of Cowboys fans.
Agreed completely. Like, you just take the points and tie it, right?
I don't care. Here's the thing.
Yes.
Don't run it third and six if you know you're going for it. If you're going two plays. So call pass play twice. Get Zeke out in space. Also, something else worth noting. Why are the Cowboys not running the football? Why are the Chiefs running the ball more than the Cowboys? The Chiefs took what was given to them by the Texans. The Cowboys, and I think to your point and my point, Brinson, Mike McCarthy's like, I'm going to prove that I'm doing things differently, and here we go, and it just blew up in their face.
So he wasn't doing anything analytical in that game. I mean, he was running the ball on first down every time, and then he would pass, and I think you're 100% spot on. I think he got to that 4th-and-3, and he's like, what would Jason Garrett do here? He's definitely kicking, right? I'm gonna go. I'm gonna show people I love analytics. I'm gonna go here because Jason Garrett would kick. And I get it. The analytics say that you should be able to pick up that first down. I would also add that I think the route was run poorly. So they ran a mesh concept, and the I can't remember who ran.
CD was the one who caught the ball.
No, I know, but I can't remember who ran the mesh above CD. But he either ran the route low, or the defenders kept him pressed in closer to the line of scrimmage on his route, and it caused CeeDee Lamb to run short of the sticks on the mesh route. And so
I think also the Dak threw it slightly a hair behind him. Maybe if you leave him, you have a chance, but yeah.
He did not, if he had thrown it ahead of him, if the routes are run better by the receivers, and if Dak gets rid of the ball faster, that's probably a first down. So I sort of wonder if maybe it wasn't a bad call.
And by the way, if they complete it and get the first down, what are we talking about?
Oh, we're like, McCarthy's not Jason Garrett. Look at what he, but I
we're talking about how the Cowboys losing overtime because they went for it on another fourth down. That's what we're talking about.
but I just wonder if maybe that's sort of the byproduct of, again, a shortened offseason. A new coaching staff, a rookie wide receiver. And so you try to execute in that spot and it comes a little short and you just like, I don't think the play call was bad. I just think the route was like, you just can't run a route short of the sticks. So did you have enough time to practice that? That's not a route that CeeDee Lamb is running a ton at Oklahoma. You know, like he's not utilizing a mesh concept against NFL defenders. He's just getting open whenever the hell he wants.
And Brinson, what you're talking about is the gray area of analytics, because analytics is black and white. You look at it and say, does this move give me a better percentage chance to win the game than this other move? And so the analytics say going forward on 4th-and-3 in that situation gives me a better chance than kicking the field goal. That's the black and white of it. When you look at the gray of it, the Cowboys were converting like 15% of their third downs up to that point in the fourth quarter. They hadn't been able to move the ball really at all. And like you said, who knows what their timing's at? This is their first game. They had already proven throughout that entire game that getting 3 yards wasn't going to be that simple. And I actually agree with you. I thought in the fourth quarter, you're down by 3, take the points. Your defense has been playing pretty well. You know, if you're winning at this point, maybe you go for it because you're trying to like step on their throat. If you're down 20-13, probably again, you go for it because that field goal, you're still down a touchdown.
You're down 20-13. You're definitely going for it.
Well, I mean, there was like 11 or 5 minutes left in the game. So Jason Garrett would have kicked the field goal down 20-13.
Don't blame it on Jason Garrett. That was by the way, you want to hear a fun, sad fact before Breach tells it?
Sure.
Uh oh.
Since the last two seasons. You know what the in 8 games, I'll give you that much. What are the Cowboys in 1-score games? Their record in 8 games?
1-7.
1-7. Is that good?
Who the only team in the NFL who is worse over that time period?
Yes, the Bengals. Everyone knows that.
Oh God, I knew you knew it.
I think here's the bigger problem for the Cowboys over the long haul is that, again, like we saw with the Buccaneers, and like we saw to a degree with the Colts, we'll talk about. These teams who don't have continuity, and I'm going to pat myself on the back one more time here. But quarterback, head coach, OC, offensive line. The teams who are struggling with continuity or don't have continuity at those spots struggled today. We saw these new quarterbacks sort of struggling. The Cowboys lost.
Cam Newton, go on.
The Patriots, that's a different style offense. They weren't trying to throw, and it's not about timing.
But it's a completely different offense than they've run in 20 years.
Okay, that's fine. You're right. I will give you that. The Patriots are the outlier there. But for the Cowboys, based on the way that everything is set up for this team, it is like their success or failure is predicated entirely on their offense. This defense isn't going to be very good.
By the way, do we know – isn't – Kellen, I can't remember his name. What's the
Kellen Moore.
He's calling the plays, right?
Yeah.
We shouldn't be dunking on Mike McCarthy per se, because I think Kellen Moore is supposed to call the plays until Mike McCarthy decides.
Well, but Mike McCarthy made the decision to go for it on 4th and 3.
Right.
But Kellen might call that play. Anyway,
the one thing that I will say about the Cowboys.
Yes, go ahead.
How do you feel right now if you're Jerry Jones and the last time the Cowboys and Rams played each other last December, Jason Garrett and the Cowboys won 44-21 with the Rams in the playoff hunt. That was a huge game for both teams. Now you turn around, you give the keys of the car to Mike McCarthy, and he crashes it into a wall. I mean, that kind of adds to the element of how ugly this loss was and how bad the Cowboys offense looked.
Jerry Jones had to sit in a $5 billion stadium that's better than the Jerry Dome and watch it all unfold.
With no mask on.
Wasn't it? Yeah,
these guys, it was Tepper and Jerry Jones, I noticed, were just like hanging out with no mask on. I guess that's
Jerry Jones was rubbing his face like crazy.
Jerry doesn't care at this point.
He was just jabbing his eyeball over and over.
He's playing with house money.
Yeah. Look, the Cowboys scored their two touchdowns in the second quarter and then went punt, punt, field goal, downs, punt, downs. That's not good enough. It's not going to cut it.
It wasn't fortunately good for them, 5 minutes ago.
Fortunately for them, there's some openings based on what else happened in the NFC East, which we'll get to in a minute.
Oh,
would be remiss if we did not mention that the Los Angeles Rams, who are now 1-0, the NFC West looks loaded. We'll get to some more teams on there in a second. But like the Rams look night and day different than they did at the end of most of last year, especially at the end of last year. I don't know if it's the lack of Todd Gurley.
Todd Gurley did look terrible on Sunday. But I think to Breach's point, I think that whooping they took in Dallas was part of it, and people doubting Sean McVay, and I think he took that personally. And, you know, you watch Hard Knocks, you feel like that team is going to be good, but you got a sense that team was coming together. Jalen Ramsey, other than that flopping, didn't play terribly. He made some good plays.
Aaron Donald was a monster as usual.
Dude, Aaron Donald, there's
a clip out there by John, like a bunch of people are tweeting it, but it's like he literally looks like a literal bowling ball. And just takes out two other human beings like they're bowling pins.
Well, one of the human beings is Connor Williams, the guard. And then after he disposes of him.
Not to be confused with Connor Williams of the Jets.
Yeah, the Connor Williams. My favorite Connor Williams plays for the Jets. And then after he disposes with him, he takes 220-pound Ezekiel Elliott and hip tosses him on his way to harassing Dak Prescott. And my point is this. Why is Zeke Elliott not out running a pass route? And why is he trying to block Aaron Donald? Why don't you use Zeke Elliott for what? I mean, why are you paying someone $15 million to try to block Aaron Donald?
I think the Cowboys offense will get better. I think the Rams, I mean, it's week one. We're overreacting to everything, but I do think the Rams look like they will be back in that.
I thought Goff flashed. Like he did some good things, much better than I typically expected.
And he was 20 of 31 for 275 yards, no touchdowns and a pick.
The pick was he got hit in the face and they didn't call it.
Like, yeah, that was bad. Yeah, you're right. The Rams would have scored a touchdown there too, I think, or at least gotten a field goal out of that. And Malcolm Brown, two touchdowns, yeah. Two rushing touchdowns. That was a situation too, where like, I think they were both like Robert Woods was called down to the one and then Brown punched it in. So like Goff could have ended up having a really nice day. I think the arrow is pointing up for the Rams. So we all were sort of burying them as the worst team in a very deep NFC West, by the way.
But even though we did bury them, Brenton, you and I both picked them to make the playoffs.
Well, I'm going to be right about at least one of my NFC West playoff predictions.
That's why you did it, so you couldn't be wrong.
I was
on all of us.
I was down on
the Van Der Esch fractured collarbone.
Oh, God.
Injured reserve for him, given his back injuries. It is hard to imagine he will be back soon.
They've had some bad luck with linebackers.
Cameron Irving also suffered an injury as well. And Blake Jarwin torn ACL. That is a tough trio of losses. Like you lose a football game 20-17. You're breaking in a new offense and a new coach. It's one thing. You lose a Irving starting, right? You lose a starting offensive lineman, your starting tight end who just gave an extension to, and your starting middle linebacker. That is a brutal blow. I would anticipate that we see, I don't know, the Cowboys.
And trade for Jason Witten probably.
Oh my God! You see that Witten graphic they flashed during the game?
One catch for 2 yards.
It's like him in like that Raiders uniform, looking all coy.
And he was ball headed. I don't know where his hair went so quickly.
He got rid of his hair. That's right. Aaron Donald, by the way, 10 quarterback pressures on 35 pass rushes. Ay yi yi. If only he could stop.
Is Robert Woods the most underrated wide receiver in the NFL? I'm not even kidding.
I agree. Tyler Lockett, but then Robert Woods.
That's close. I love both those guys.
Woods is just awesome.
Every single time he is open and he makes plays. And it's
he
funny.
He doesn't get a ton of touchdowns, but he has like 8 catches for 110 yards every time.
Apparently he's underrated by opposing defenses. They're just watching film. Like, we don't have to worry about that guy.
That's crazy.
He's not going to beat us.
Do you guys like peacocks? Oh, Proud is a peacock, baby.
I like peacocks, but peacocks. That was a pun.
Save.
Yeah, please cut that, Debo.
Debo, cut that and save it.
The thing is, Breach knew a half a syllable in where this was going, and he just couldn't stop himself. So that's what makes it even better. Well, that's the first self dunk of the season. Way to go, Breach.
Well, Peacock Prisco was sauntering around the CBS offices during the halftime shows because the Green Bay Packers 43-34 against the Minnesota Vikings at halftime. The score was 22-10, which is not really a score you would want to be peacocking on. But Pete said along the lines of like, I told you this was a good team. I told you. People said Aaron Rodgers was washed up. Please, Aaron Rodgers is great. Aaron Rodgers was great. He was the Millie Maker winning quarterback. He went 32 of 44 for 364 yards and 4 touchdowns against the Vikings defense, which used to be good and apparently no longer is. The Packers obviously covered the +1.5. By the way, Rams covered and won. Packers covered and won. And the Cardinals, of course, covered and won outright. You know what that means?
What?
Pick Six Podcast Parlay hits in week 1. And we told you to splash on the money line parlay, been like 12 or 13 to 1. That hit as well. You'll be unsurprised to find out that this is the one time I didn't bet it.
Ooh. Well,
I'm not surprised.
What's a payout on a 3-way parlay?
Well, 5 to 1.
Ooh.
And then the money line. Because the Cardinals were like 2.5 to 1. It paid out really nicely. So whoops on me. The over 44.5 hit of Packers almost hit it by themselves. Aaron Rodgers, 38 points. Davante Adams, 27 points. He smashed. Davante Adams did. He ended up finishing with 14 catches on 17 targets for 156 yards and 2 touchdowns. Marquez Valdes-Scantling, 4 catches on 6 targets, 96 yards and 1 touchdown. Pete is going to text me MVS every time he catches a touchdown. Or every time he catches a pass. And by the way, Pete, also out there on the Twitter streets, trolling friend of the show, Mina Kimes.
Hey, look, Pete deserves it, but I can predict what will happen. When Aaron Rodgers lays an egg, Pete will be blocking to the point of carpal tunnel syndrome because...
He tweeted hi at Mina Kimes.
Hey, look, man, he deserves it because everyone... I think she went out of her way to dunk on him when he initially came out with the quarterback rankings or whatever it is
she subtweeted about power rankings. Everybody was tweeting about like the guy who had the Packers second. It was ridiculous. How are you the Packers second behind the Ravens or ahead of the
my
Ravens?
Theory is this, not with Pete. Pete's right to gloat right now. We'll see if he keeps it up. My theory is that the Packers had an opportunity to trade up and get Jerry Jeudy or Henry Ruggs. And instead they picked the worst possible draft class just so that Aaron Rodgers could spike win football games in 2020. And I think he's like, I'll do it by myself. I don't care. I'll be condescending and a jerk about it. And first victim.
They don't like Jordan Love as a prospect.
I hate him.
Nor do they want to ever play him, but they knew it would motivate Aaron Rodgers to play well for like the final two.
Like they literally, when they were scouting Jordan Love, they wanted him to play safety. But like, yeah, we'll draft him as a quarterback. We'll trade him the first round to get him. We'll see what happens.
Sixth-round grade on him. Like, well, look, we could get him a wide receiver, but what if we just draft him in the first round? Aaron Jones, 16 carries, 66 yards, and a touchdown as well. Kirk Cousins actually finished with a nice day, 19 of 25, 259 yards, 2 touchdowns. Adam Thielen went off, 6 catches, 110 yards, and 2 touchdowns. My big takeaway here, the Vikings scoring was garbage time. I mean, big time garbage time. They were down 36-18. Cut it to 36-26 with 8 minutes left. I guess that's not crazy. But they couldn't stop the Packers at all. And I think this may be a recurring theme.
Yeah.
Beniel Hunter comes back.
Well, and that's the thing is I know that Pete Prisco definitely going to be peacocking like you've been saying.
What else would he, if it's Pete and he's peacocking, what would he be doing?
When I look at this game, I don't know if I look at it as how good the Packers looked versus how bad the Vikings looked. Like, you're Minnesota, you're Mike Zimmer, you dumped four of your defensive starters, like shipped half of them off to Cincinnati, and you thought your team was magically just going to be better in week one in a pandemic shortened offseason where they didn't have any time to kind of figure things out. You have a young secondary. Like, what else was going to happen? This was just the Vikings were basically asking for this, and Kirk Cousins isn't the type of quarterback who's going to win a shootout. And although he played decently, he had the ugly interception with under a minute left in the first half, which allowed Aaron Rodgers to throw two touchdown passes in 25 seconds, and that put the game away. So to me, I'm not sure how good the Packers are. They're good. I don't know that they're great, but I do know that if I'm a Vikings fan, I'm really worried about this team's defense right now. And going forward, I don't know who you're going to be able to stop. They have to play the Colts. I don't think they can stop the Colts. I don't think they can stop the Titans. Yeah. I don't think they can stop the Texans. Like, they have a lot of good offenses on their schedule. And because the defense was so bad and Danielle Hunter's not going to be back for a few weeks, you know, I don't know where this is going to end for them. And I don't know that we're going to know how good the Packers are for at least a couple more weeks.
Did Yannick Ngakoue play? He's not in the stat sheet.
That's a good question.
Because if he did, that's troubling. If he didn't, the breaches point, him and Danielle Hunter out, that's even more troubling. So the secondary is a huge issue, the cornerback at least, because of all the young guys that Breach has talked about departing. So maybe you would expect that the young players will get better on defense, but you don't have a lot of time.
And yeah, Yannick played. He had a quarterback hit.
Sweet.
Quarterback hit.
Yeah.
I mean, they had zero sacks.
Well, that's why he only had a hit, I suppose. But you would like more than a hit out of a guy who's, I think, making $12 million and looking for certainly more than that.
Rashawn Gary had two quarterback hits as well. Is Pete going to be spot on about this? Like every guy's taking a leap that Pete mentioned. That's Jair Alexander had a sack and an interception and a quarterback hit. Oh, God, this is hell.
Offensively, this is everything. I don't know if this is what you want to see if you're the Packers. It's Davante Adams is the entire offense or from the receiving standpoint. He caught 14 of 32 passes. If he gets injured or they play a team that actually has a good secondary that can shut him down, you know, that was the Packers' issue last year. That's the issue they didn't fix in the draft, and we don't know that issue has gotten better because, again,
Scanling played well.
What?
About his Scanling was 4 catches, 96.
He had some bad drops too, though.
He did have some bad drops.
Right. I think, I'm not trying to take away from the Packers. This was an awesome game. You go into Minnesota, and frankly, I picked the Packers to cover and to win. So I'm not, they were part of the parlay. They were one of my best bets.
Did we all pick the Packers to win the division?
I think so.
Yeah. I don't think anyone was sold on the Vikings because of the deep.
I picked the Lions.
Oh, right. God, I can't wait to talk about that game. Go ahead.
At least he admitted it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's out there. Pick the Cardinals too, though. We'll get to that in a second too. Look, what the Packers did was very good. They had 11 first downs rushing, 17 passing. They converted 55% of their third downs. 50% of their,
what's the butt? I mean, I think.
Well, they averaged 6.9 yards per play. Like they were awesome on offense. I think that there is a belief coming out of this week that this is who the Packers are. And I tend to think that it may be a bigger issue as to what the Vikings are on defense. And to Breach's point about Kirk Cousins not being a guy that can like win a game by himself, everybody was sort of like banging on Kevin Stefanski for how he hindered the Vikings offense last year. It's Mike Zimmer. And we talked about this with Prisco. It is 100% Mike Zimmer.
I don't know. Did you watch the Browns game? That might be Stefanski.
Stefanski didn't watch that game either.
All I'm saying is that if the Vikings think that they can win by being a Mike Zimmer conservative offense with the defense that they have now, then the Vikings are not going to the playoffs.
No, they need to be concerned about being a Mike Zimmer conservative defense. That's the issue.
If their defense is this bad, if this is what their defense is, then they are in big trouble because they don't have the offensive chops to crank it up. I mean, they've got Stephon Diggs. It's just Adam Thielen.
That's right. The defense will get better because they're younger. Justin Jefferson had a few catches. He'll get better. But again, that's right. You're already one down in the division against the team that is going to be the toughest play in that division.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, I will get on over the Lions.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
I'm Trey Wingo. And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's the butterfly effect for real.
All right, so let's stick with the NFC North. Oh, this would hurt. This is the worst.
Mm.
The Bears, 27. The Lions, 23. The Bears, plus 2.5, covers the over 42.5 hits. If you were sitting on the Lions, ay, ay, ay. I mean, I was in a group chat with somebody who's like, you know what? This has a little bit of Detroit, Arizona from last year vibe to it. I was like, no, these Lions are going to close, baby. No, they didn't. They did not. They let MVP Mitch Trubisky storm back on him. Trubisky was the top fantasy performer in this game with 29 points. Matthew Stafford, 17. Anthony Miller showed up late, 14. The Bears outscored the Lions 21-0 in the fourth quarter. It should have been 21-7. The Lions should have won, but second round rookie running back DeAndre Swift dropped what? I mean,
one of the worst drops you'll ever see.
One of the worst drops you'll ever see. Stafford hit him in the damn hands as he's turning around, and he dropped it. Stone Cold dropped it. He had smoked a cornerback. It drops, and the Lions lost. The Bears won, and our former coworker Bleep, of course, is just saying Bleep's got nothing to do.
Oh, I was wondering what that text meant. I was confused by it. Now I understand.
What? Which one?
Sup.
Yeah.
SUP. Got it.
Acting like he's excited. I mean, like, it's like, we get it.
Come go on. Study, a nerd.
Yeah, go do some study. At any rate, Bleep tweeted on Sunday. I can't live in a place where I'm dying to watch Nick Foles, but I'm dying to watch Nick Foles. In other words, just like all these other Bears fans, they gave up on Mitchell Trubisky. They were bashing Mitchell Trubisky left and right. That tweet was from halftime. They're ripping Trubisky. They're calling the Bears terrible. Like maybe we should just tank for Trevor after an all season of optimism about Nick Foles about winning the job. Of course he didn't win the job. They rigged it for Trubisky. They passed on Cam Newton to get Nick Foles so Trubisky could win. And then somehow Trubisky pulls off this incredible comeback in the fourth quarter. And by the way, we're 16 weeks away, or I guess 28 weeks away, from Trubisky getting franchise tagged.
After he leads the Bears to the Super Bowl.
That would suck.
You know what though? The text thread saying that this has a Cardinals feeling from last year. I had the opposite feeling. This game got to the fourth quarter. The Lions were up 23-6. Mitchell Trubisky had been total trash. And I was thinking in my head, there's no way they can blow this lead. And by the, when the fourth quarter started, the Bears were at the Lions 10-yard line. So they were going to score something, whether it was a field goal or a touchdown. But in my head, I'm thinking, even if they get a touchdown, it's 23-13 with like 12 minutes left in the game. The Lions aren't blowing that. They're not blowing this 23-6 lead. They're not blowing a 23-13 lead. Matt Patricia's learned his lesson. Well, you know who didn't learn his lesson? Matt Patricia. Ryan, do you know who was a good Lions coach?
Jim Caldwell. Did he go 9-7 back-to-back season before they fired?
Jim Caldwell, 9-7 back-to-back seasons. This was unbelievable. I like, if I was a Lions fan, I would have pulled out all of my hair. As the resident Bengals fan of this podcast, I thought the Lions had the worst loss, the most painful loss,
yes,
on Sunday. And this was just absurd that they lost this game.
What was Jim Caldwell's record when he got fired?
9-7 back-to-back years.
Do you know what Matt Patricia's record with the Lions is now?
He's won nine games.
He has 23-1.
My God.
As our pal Michael David Smith tweeted, I retweeted it, and somebody replied, said, it's pretty black and white.
Here's the thing. In Matt Patricia's defense, he's been great for social justice issues the last few months. I give him that. Maybe he should do that full time if we're being honest about it. But the football stuff ain't working out. And to make matters worse, Breach said this game was a much worse loss than the Bengals game, and I agree. Trubisky should have been benched at halftime. That's how poorly Mitch Trubisky played. And he shouldn't have been benched for Joe Burrow. He should have been benched for Nick Foles. If Nick Foles had come out of the third quarter, you'd be like, yeah, he had it coming. I don't know why it took so long. But Mitch Trubisky finds his second win, and it goes absolutely off. DeAndre Swift obviously helps. Jeffrey Okuda didn't play for the Lions, their top first-round pick. They traded Darius Slay because they know what's best, and they absolutely Lions it up. Again, I mean, we talked about this with the other game. If the Cowboys had converted that fourth down late in the game, maybe something else happens. If DeAndre Swift catches it, we're not having this conversation. But he didn't catch it. Just like last year, they blew it in the first week against the Cardinals and tied that game.
So the Lions have now, in their first in the last two Week 1 games, they've outscored their opponents 40-12 in the first three quarters and have been outscored 39-7 in the fourth quarter. Jamie Collins...
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
Was ejected for going up to a referee and attempting to show him how another player lowered his head to initiate contact. He made a little contact with the referee, and the referee ejected him.
By the way, you're leaving out the best part. The referee pulled the Jalen Ramsey and sort of flopped, like when he got hit.
He flopped. By the way, Jamie Collins' agent, David Cantor, went bananas on Twitter, like dropping F-bombs like crazy. Like, are you kidding me? You can't do that. And it's just, the Lions just unraveled. The Lions, I don't know if I give the Bears credit. I mean, I give the Bears some credit because they came back, but this is just Detroit completely unraveling. It was humiliating. They're a joke. Why?
Patricia did have a good quote there about DeAndre Swift. I'll give him that. Did you see that?
No, what did he say?
He said, I put my arm around him as soon as we got to the tunnel, walked up the tunnel with him and told him he's a great player. The game's not on him. It's on me, which is true.
What if DeAndre Swift would have been like, well, I hope they fire you.
Eric Casilius on the post-game show made a pretty good point. He said if DeAndre Swift was wearing his Georgia uniform, he definitely catches that ball.
What? You could lie the Lions. DeAndre Swift had 3 carries for 8 yards. You know who the Lions' leading rusher was?
Oh,
Adrian Peterson. What was their plan a week ago? Like, what was this team planning to do at running back? Was Matt Stafford going to throw 65 passes? You're waiting for a 35-year-old to be cut by what was one of the worst teams in the NFL last year. You pick him up, and now he's the star of your offense? Like, that's not a game plan. That doesn't work. What are you thinking? What is going on in Detroit? I don't get it.
Even worse, DeAndre Swift and Kerryon Johnson the last 3 years are both second-round picks as running back. They combined.
Right.
They combined to have 10 carries, and AP, as Breach pointed out, had 14.
It's almost inexplicable. I'm trying to look up and see who was came right after Kerryon Johnson was 2018.
Right.
But right after DeAndre Swift taken, Xavier McKinney, Kyle Duggar, Yedder Gross-Matos, who's very good. It looks like he'll be good. Robert Hunt, Ross Blacklock, Jonathan Taylor, LaVisca Chenault. Cole Kmet, Grant Delpit, Antonio Winfield. I mean, they're just players on here that you could have had.
Galladay also didn't play on Sunday, but again, no excuse for losing.
I think they win that game with Galladay.
They should have won the game anyway. I mean, they were up by what? How many points were they up first half?
They were up 23-6 in the fourth quarter.
So let me ask you this.
By the way, the guy that Anthony Miller, who scored the game-winning touchdown, was taking 8 picks after Kerryon Johnson.
If you're up 23-6 in the fourth quarter and you're any team at any level and you're facing Mr. Trubisky, your chances of winning that football game are about 99.9%.
It was actually 98%. They showed the red zone showed the winning percentage, the win expectancy or whatever. It was 98%.
Well, wins over Wilson was 99.9, so we're close. They lost.
It's humiliating. All right.
I thought one of the most interesting plays in that game, real quick, was 3rd and 5. That Stafford threw an interception, set up the Bears touchdown that they eventually won with, and they could have run it and made the Bears use their final timeout. They didn't. Stafford threw an interception, but I didn't pick the Lions to win the division, so I don't care.
Trubisky was 8 of 20 in the first half, 12 of 16 in the second with 3 touchdowns.
So
he's thrown for 3 touchdowns in 4 of 6 meetings against the Lions. He's a Lions killer. I would not look at this as the Lions are trash and the Bears. You look at it as like, all right, if the Lions want to win this division or want to compete for a playoff spot, which is not out of the question still, that you can't have these losses. I mean, you just have to put teams away. You have to learn how to win.
We keep saying that about this Matt Patricia team, and they keep losing these games.
Maybe they'll learn how to win next week when they play the Packers.
I was going to say before you mentioned the Lions, is there anything to take away about Mitch Trubisky year 3 putting it together or not?
I've been telling you since the offseason, since before Bleep quit, that they're going to franchise tag him.
He played better, though. He played better over the last
year. He should have picked up his 5th-year option so they wouldn't have to spend more on him. There is nothing Ryan Pace would love more than to have to give, and this is year 4 for Trubisky, than to have to give Trubisky is that right? Yeah.
It's year four. Okay.
Because they were eligible for a contract extension.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. There's nothing Ryan Pace would love more than to give Mitch Trubisky $40 million a year.
You know what? You know who, like, Matt Nagy.
What would if they go to the playoffs and they win 10 games and Trubisky throws for 4,500 yards and 30 touchdowns, which is just Blake.
You're not giving him more than $25 million, no matter what.
That is not true. He will get $35 million a year.
No way on planet Earth. You are crazy. He is not getting more than $25 million a year.
You want to bet? If
no team is giving him more than $25 million. All right, Breach, how much would you pay if you need a quarterback desperately next year? Let's say you're the Jaguars, because Gardner Minshew doesn't work out and you don't have the first overall pick. How much are you paying Mitch Trubisky?
Is this Mitch Trubisky the first 3 quarters or 3 touchdown passes in the fourth quarter? I'm saying
Trubisky has a monster year.
Well, give us the numbers that you mentioned a second.
4,000 passing yards and 30 passing touchdowns. 30 passing.
If he has a monster year and the Bears go 10-6, he's getting at least $30 million a year.
Okay. I want to know who's paying him that money, because
I mean, Jacoby Brissett's making $27 million a year.
I would rather have Jacoby Brissett.
I mean, this bum Carson Wentz is getting $32 million a year. Like, Trubisky's getting more than that.
But I do think it'll be
interesting. Speaking of which.
All right, go ahead.
The Washington football team.
Oh, boy.
The Washington football team.
All right. Fire up Debo's mic and let's bring him in, because this is depressing. There is.
Oh, man.
First of all, the Washington football team, who put 29 characters in their end zone. I mean, Washington football team established like 1932. They won 27-17 in a rousing victory over the Philadelphia Eagles to win Ron Rivera's debut game for Washington. Dwayne Haskins, 17 of 31 for 178 and a touchdown, I thought was actually kind of impressive with the way he played at various points. During that game, Washington, of course, won the covered plus 5.5. The over 41.5 snuck in barely on a late field goal by Washington. Carson Wentz was the top fantasy performer with 16 points, which is also roughly how many times he was sacked. Dallas Goedert, 16 points. Dwayne Haskins, 14. Peyton Barber found the end zone, 14 points as well. I think the two main takeaways I have, one for each team, sort of dovetail into each other. And it's that Washington's defensive line in their front four, their pass rush in general is terrifying.
Woot woot, big trust.
Yeah. But the Eagles' offensive line is a big, big, big problem. And Carson Wentz trying to hold the ball and make plays, not doing himself any favors. They jumped out to a big lead. Jalen Reagor had a huge chunk play. They were taking shots down the field, and then Washington just poured it on. I mean, like, so I was sitting at my desk where I'm like sitting where in the same spot when I'm watching TV earlier, like watching the games. I got a TV right here by my desk and two TVs over there against the wall.
Humble brag.
None of those TVs are newer than like 12 years.
Go ahead.
But they're all big screens. And I got my feet on my desk watching the red zone over here. I had the Eagles in the Washington football game on the right. I kept thinking it was a highlight montage of Carson Wentz getting sacked. It's like every time you just glance, like you look over, it's just Carson Wentz getting mauled by a Washington football team defensive lineman. Can we please get a nickname, guys? Please. This is, it's
WFP.
If you look at it, Carson Wentz was sacked, I believe.
Eight was the tally? Wasn't
eight, it eight times.
Eight times. And 14 quarterback hits. That is a lot for a guy who, as we all know, Debo can't stay healthy.
Yeah, I'm shocked he stayed healthy through that game. Jalen Hurts, healthy scratch from that one. So not necessarily what you want to see from your second round pick to start, but it feels pretty awful to hang on to this hope throughout an entire pandemic and just be real hyped for the start of the season and then lose week one to a team that has no name. That kind of sucks. You know, I didn't expect on September 13th to be telling myself, oh, it's sick. The NFC has 7 playoff teams this year. Like, that's what I'm telling myself already. But Carson Wentz, definitely partially to blame. He needs to be better. But I don't know how you operate with that offensive line. I think pregame, I think the fan base was ready to have these built-in excuses because of the injuries.
No Miles Sanders in this game, obviously.
And I didn't Austin think Scott. – Right. Lane Johnson, I think, is the biggest omission. Whenever you're missing him, it changes the entire dynamic of the team. I wasn't ready to accept those excuses because even with those people missing, I thought you beat the Washington football team. If you want to be a contender of any sense, you beat the Washington football team.
So and they were no 17-0. Felt like the game was over.
I mean, the first touchdown was a great catch by Zach Ertz. Like, okay, this is how this is going to go. And Zach Ertz was super pumped because, you know, reportedly he had a heated conversation with Howie Roseman about the contract. And then good Lord almighty, Jack Driscoll, the rookie from Auburn, actually had to start for Lane Johnson. Other guys who didn't play, Javon Hargrave, was he injured, Debo?
He was out.
I was looking forward to seeing him play. Wasn't it? No, Derek
Barnett.
Trust
me, you've told me about him all off season. I was looking forward to Hargrave. And then Driscoll went out. So it's tough. Carson Wentz has definitely got to operate, but I'd like to see any quarterback in the league operate behind that line. And, you know, you might get out of it and not take 8 sacks, but you're throwing the ball away and we're still criticizing your play for not getting anything done.
Let's name this tweeter. Carson Wentz is hurting his team. Point blank. He's hurting the team. Only reason Washington's in the game is Wentz.
Oh, that must be, is that DK?
No.
That one of our resident Eagles fans, one of our many Eagles fans here at CBS Sports.
I would say
not a CBS Sports personality.
Someone who is known, it would be surprising to be told this person was tweeting this as recently as 1 p.m. today.
That's right.
Who is it?
Dan Orlovsky.
Oh, I was going to guess Dan.
Oh, you hate to see it, Dan. Dan has been Carson Wentz's personal PR manager for the past several months and explained to people why Carson is great and Dak stinks, or Dak is worse than Carson. And by 3:11 p.m., he had to come out and admit that Carson Wentz is playing very poorly. I do agree, though, Debo. Like, the game – why is Carson Wentz – how on earth – can you be in a game where you are leading 17-0 with 7 minutes to go in the second quarter, and your quarterback and you don't have a running back who attempts more than 10 rushes and your quarterback throws 42 times? That is irresponsible.
That's fair. He threw a pick right before the half that Washington converted into a touchdown, and I really think got the momentum going for them.
Haskins was belief that they could actually do something.
Right, and that defense is absolutely scary. I cannot argue with that, but just adjust, adapt. You should not be blowing a 17-point lead to Dwayne Haskins and that offense, even when you're facing that defense.
Can I point something out?
No, absolutely not. Not on a podcast.
So here's, you may recall Breach, one of the many millions of mock drafts we did every Monday leading up to the actual draft, and some butthole took Tua Tagovailoa with the Redskins pick at number 2 overall. There he is.
Hit the button. Hit the button. Brian said the R word.
Dang it.
You did say it.
We need right, to get it. I'll get the tote board in a second.
Put it in the jar.
My point is, as I update the tote board there, I'm at 5 now. Good Lord. Brinson's going to be.
You actually have an updating tote board?
Yeah, I said it 5 times after saying no moron would keep saying the word. But the point is that, you know, we did have conversations. Should they take Tua? We don't know about doing Haskins. Chase Young was such a layup at number 2. It's one of the easiest picks you'll ever make. He had 2 strip sacks today. Debo's talking about how the whole defensive line was terrorizing Carson Wentz. He was a big part of that. He stood out early and often, and that was such a simple pick, and he didn't overcomplicate it when you made the pick, and paying dividends immediately from day 1.
And I'm going to say real quick, I absolutely put this loss on Doug Peterson. It's kind of funny that Doug Peterson's facing Sean McVay next week, because maybe we'll find out who the better coach is. But Brenton, I really think you hit the nail on the head with this. Why did the Eagles only run the ball 17 times? If your offensive line is getting manhandled by a defensive line, if your quarterback is getting maimed by a defensive line, you can't ask him to drop back and pass, throw the ball 42 times. You can't throw 42 passes and only run the ball 17 times. Or if you're going to throw 42 passes, you've got to put screens in there, draws in there, hand the ball. You got to do anything you can think of to slow down the defensive line so your quarterback is not continuously taking these hits. And because Carson Wentz took these hits, that is why Washington won. I thought this game did not teach me anything about Washington. Their longest touchdown drive was 48 yards. Everything was set up by something bad that Philadelphia did. It was 2 interceptions. Then there was one drive where they're buried so back in their own territory that Washington's next drive started inside the 50 following a punt. So they didn't really do anything that said, hey, look, they were the better team in this game. All I saw was Washington's defensive line won this because Doug Peterson, I don't know if it was like just big head that he was just too arrogant saying, hey, we can throw the ball and win. He couldn't. They didn't. And because of it, they lost.
Does the fact that Zach Ertz had 3 catches for 18 yards and Dallas Goedert had 8 catches for 101 yards, does that say anything to you, Debo?
Ertz had a crucial drop on a 4th-and-3 to really extend the game when the Eagles were down 24-17. And at that point, you know, I think Howie Roseman is saying something to himself up in the box or wherever he's watching, because Dallas Goedert was the best tight end on the Eagles today. But yeah, I think to Breach's point, I think it was arrogance all around from Peterson, from Wentz, just thinking that he can extend. Trust me, I'm still, you know, this offseason shrine to Wentz is still being built. It's not going to be just torn down in 1 week. But discouraging week 1.
Okay, so I don't think that the Washington football team is going to beat anybody like the Ravens, who they play in 3 weeks because of their defensive line. But if this team can play opponents with bad offensive lines and bad defenses, of which there are many in the NFL, that's half the National Football League.
This team the coach has to be arrogant also and insist on their game plan working, even if it's not working.
Well, so I'm sort of thinking, so they play the Cardinals in Arizona next week, and I don't know that that's a perfect matchup. I think Arizona's defense is pretty good, and Kyler's mobile and all that, but their offensive line's not very good. They play the Browns in Cleveland the week after
that. I can see them destroying Baker Mayfield.
Uh-huh. Like the Browns' offensive line is definitely better, but it's not great. They have the Giants twice in the span of 4 weeks. In fact, here, listen to this. So they have, this is their schedule from October 18th they get the Giants, Cowboys offensive line doesn't look great. Giants again, Lions, Bengals, and then the Cowboys again. I feel like this team could win six games now.
Oh. I was just going down the schedule. I see a path to eight wins. Like, that's not that crazy.
This is if we were doing like a hot take or just right situation for this podcast, hot take or just right, the Washington football team can win the NFC East.
Stop it. What is going on?
Why not? Are the Eagles good? No.
The Eagles are banged up. If they get healthy, they'll be fine. Eagles the Cowboys are
always banged up.
Yeah, but they're not going to get healthy. That's the Eagles. That's the nature of the Eagles.
The Cowboys lost three starters for the next like.
And by the way, we're recording this before the Giants probably end up beating the Steelers. So then we'll have to rejigger the whole conversation.
But we'll be talking, I'm sure, tonight or tomorrow night. Yeah, tonight because it's already Monday morning at 2 a.m.
Brinson, who'd you pick to win the NFC East?
The Cowboys.
Would you switch your pick right now if you could?
If I knew what happened in this game in week one, I would definitely do like an insane thing and pick the Washington football team.
Washington's in first place. The Cowboys are tied for last place. If as of right this second, would you change your pick?
Let's say are you offering me, what odds would you offer me to bet on the Washington football team to win the division right now?
2-1.
No, that's not high enough.
You just talked about how awesome they are.
4-1.
I would bet 4-1. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I would make that bet with you.
It's like the Trubisky bet.
Let's do 10 bucks.
10 bucks? Oh my God. Someone write this down. Are we recording this? We got $10 bet.
You still owe me the Trubisky bet too.
So. I owe you 10 bucks. Yeah, I owe you 15.
You can Venmo him 15 at the end of the year.
That's right. All right. Moving along.
Just throwing $10 away.
The Jaguars beat the Colts 27-20. Oh my God. I mean, I don't know what to tell you about this. The Jaguars covered the +7. They obviously won outright. Over a 44.5 hit. Bunch of overs hit this week. Gardner Minshew was awesome. 25 fantasy points. Awesome.
You know how many incompletions he threw?
One.
95% completion.
19 of 20 for 173 yards and three touchdowns, including a touchdown pass to DJ Chark. DJ Chark. He also hit LaVisca Chenault, which caused fantasy football Twitter to lose its collective mind. And Nyheim Hines, 18 fantasy points. Phillip Rivers, 16 fantasy points. I don't know what to say.
Also, bad news, Marlon Mack looks like he's done for the year with an Achilles.
He's done for the year with an Achilles injury. They have Jonathan Taylor and Hines. I don't know what to say. I mean, Rivers got the ball.
He stinks. Down. And I'm angry because I was all in on Phillip Rivers in this team. And he said, hey, it's still the same Phillip Rivers. I just changed uniforms.
I will say that I think I picked the Jaguars who went outright on the site.
What'd you do that?
I just don't care that you're – Frank Reich was literally saying, hey, we're a rushing team. And you know what you signed Phillip Rivers, you know what you get. You're getting this gunslinger who's going to throw interceptions in bad spots, but also give you a ton of passing yards. But if you want to be a rushing team because you had that depth, then be a rushing team. You don't go out there and throw the ball 46 times and only run the ball 22 times. Keep the ball out of Phillip Rivers' hands. Only let him touch it when he absolutely needs to. Like, I thought the biggest play of this game – the Colts went up 7-0. They were driving to take a 14-0 lead. They had a first and goal at Jacksonville's 3-yard line. You have three really good running backs. Use them. But instead, they didn't use them. And Phillip Rivers threw an interception on that drive. Instead of 14-0, it's still 7-0. Jacksonville goes down and scores. Now it's 7-7. And at that point, Jacksonville's like, all right, well, we can play with this team. And then Rivers throws another ugly interception. It was disastrous.
I mean,
the problem was, it was like, all right, Rivers got the ball and the running gag is like, all right, Rivers has the ball late in games. He's going to throw a backbreaking pick. And it was like, okay, is it a Chargers thing or a Rivers thing? And the Chargers won late and Rivers didn't. By the way,
the Chargers won. We'll talk about it later. They won anti-Rivers football, which is what we knew they would do. So
I look, Frisco and Jamie and Costas have been blitzkrieging me about the Colts Super Bowl pick. I get it. Bad week for them.
You made worse picks.
Yeah, I made worse picks. I definitely thought they could lose this game in Jacksonville. It's their first week I probably gave Rivers too much credit for being able to acclimate quickly to this team. You know, it's, nobody's blasting Tom Brady for losing.
Yeah, I was thinking about that while Breach was talking a moment ago. But I mean, no one among the three of us, I would imagine, or probably most people on planet Earth, feel they're not more concerned about Tom Brady than they are about Phillip Rivers. They probably feel, myself included, that Phillip Rivers is who we thought he was. Tom Brady will rebound.
By the way, Rivers actually completed 96.6% of his passes against the Cardinals in 2018. Minshew just under that. Marcus Mariota and Drew Brees also in the top three there. LaVisca Chenault, just the sixth Jaguar to score a receiving touchdown his debut. Rashad Greene in 2015 was the last. Rivers on his touchdown said, or his interception said, yeah, the second one, I'd like to add that back. But I didn't think I was being reckless. This is a decision you had to make in the heat of it. Certainly those terms hurt.
So imagine a guy with 11 kids who dresses super conservatively, wears a bolo tie, is more footloose and fancy free than that caveman Gardner Minshew, who outplayed him every step of the way. Great game by Minshew. We don't talk enough about how good he played. We're already, we being me, I'm using the royal we here. I have Trevor Lawrence going number one overall in my first mock draft of the season. Gardner, look, man, Gardner's got something.
They ain't going to the Jaguars. Jaguars won't be the worst team in football.
That's right, they won't.
And look, the Jaguars are going to be like the Panthers a little bit. I think they'll be feisty, in games, score a lot of points, and they're just going to have to hope for some breaks on defensive side of the ball. Let's move on. Cardinal, I don't want to talk about this anymore.
And real quick, I messed up my notes. When the Colts were down at Jacksonville's 3-yard line, they failed on a fourth down. It wasn't a Phillip Rivers interception. Rivers threw an interception on the next possession in Indy territory, and then the Jags scored a couple of plays later, and then that is what tied the game.
Not mentioned in all this, by the way, T.Y. Hilton had a horrific drop. Ooh. That set up the fourth down. That four, you know, sort of didn't, not doing Rivers any favors there. Cardinals 24, 49ers 20. All right, if I'm going to take these beatings, I'm going to step up and tell y'all, I had the Cardinals in first place, son. And they're right there. They're tied for first place with the Seahawks, who I had in last place. Whoops. Cardinals covered 6.5. And this
and tied one, with the Rams. Don't forget the Rams.
A three-way tie in first. That's right. One-way tie in last. The under a 48 hit. Kyler Murray, 28 fantasy points. Jimmy Garoppolo, 22 fantasy points. Raheem Mostert, 20 points. Does this raise any red flags for you guys about the San Francisco 49ers?
Go ahead, Breach. I didn't get to watch a lot of this game because I was actually working while you guys were landing.
I would say yes, it does. If I am a 49ers fan, I am very concerned by what I saw, because you look at what the 49ers did. They scored a touchdown, I think, on a 75-yard pass.
76-yard pass to Raheem Mostert.
76-yard pass. That was their entire offense. I think about 30% of their offensive yards in this game came on that pass. The offense completely disappeared in the second half. Whatever the Cardinals were doing to George Kittle, double teaming, triple teaming, they absolutely shut him down. You had Debo Samuel not playing. Garoppolo had no idea where to throw the ball. And so he just looked absolutely flummoxed out there, just looking around, couldn't do anything. I mean, the 49ers offense basically sputtered in the second half. And I really thought the other part of this was that Cliff Kingsbury knows how to use DeAndre Hopkins. I don't know if Bill O'Brien was taking notes or maybe could have learned something from watching this game. DeAndre Hopkins caught, 14 passes, which was more than every Texans receiver caught combined against the Chiefs in week one. That was a career high for DeAndre Hopkins. And you know what? One thing we have talked about this offseason is that the 49ers defense, if there's one thing it struggles to do, is stop mobile quarterbacks. And Kyler Murray just ran circles around him. That was a big reason. Every time they needed a big stop to get off the field, they couldn't do it. Kyler rushed for 91 yards on just 13 carries, and that was a big reason why the Cardinals won. So absolutely, I would say yes. I'm concerned about the – I'm more concerned about the 49ers than I am the Buccaneers.
Well, I would note this. I did see these highlights. Number one, George Kittle went out with a hyperextended knee, and that was on a medicine ball from Jimmy G. If Jimmy G had thrown the ball properly, he wouldn't have had to jump in the air and get jacked up. So he went out, and he didn't come back. When he came back, he wasn't the same. You mentioned Debo Samuel not there. Brandon Ayuk also didn't play. So those are three of the best players on that team, obviously. And that's
three
a huge
best pass catchers.
So that's clearly an issue. But, I mean, you're right about Dre Hopkins. He had 16 targets. I would imagine Devontae was the only other person that had more targets. He had 17. So clearly, there's some crazy game plan in Green Bay and Arizona where you target your best players. And that's a shot at Billy O'Brien there.
Do you remember that 30 seconds or like the 15 minutes or whatever it was where we're like, well, maybe Bill O'Brien knows what he's doing when David Johnson scored that touchdown?
Yeah, that was literally 30 seconds. But No, hats off to Brinson for calling this out with the, and I think we all thought that the Cardinals would be better. We should know how much better in this tough division, but I do feel like the 49ers could be, if they had a little backslide, it wouldn't shock me, but I mean, sort of like the Eagles, they're down with some injuries. Also, Brinson, you didn't point this out yet. Trent Williams, comeback player of the year, is looking good. You see that steamrolling he put on whoever that poor snap was? He
killed somebody. He's awesome. Yeah, I just think the 49ers are kind of banged up right now. I would also say that, I mean, like Byron Murphy had a huge pass breakup on fourth down late in the game. He played well. Buda Baker is awesome. Chandler Jones is great. I mean, like, I think the Cardinals defense is, I mean, they held the 49ers to 20 points. I know they're missing a bunch of players, but like, that's an impressive feat to hold a Kyle Shanahan offense to 20 points when, you know, they had scored what? They were up to 13 with, you know, late in the second quarter after a Robbie Gould field goal. I mean, they had, like Breach points out, they had that one long touchdown pass and that was it. Jarrett McKinnon also scored later, to give them a 20-17 lead. I think the Cardinals are a thing.
Again, yeah, I mean, yeah, right. Of course. But it was good to see.
Right. They'll lose to Washington next week. We'll be like, is Cliff Kingsbury on the hot seat?
Oh my God. If they beat Washington, you will be all in on the Redskins.
Ding, ding, ding.
On them winning the division.
Bum, bum, ba-dum. I will say I said I was concerned about the 49ers. I just looked at their schedule. I'm no longer concerned. Their next four games are Jets, Giants, Eagles, Dolphins.
They're 7-point favorites at the Jets. Is that high enough?
They're playing in the same stadium two games in a row. They play the Jets and Giants.
They have to fly back and forth.
Both on the road. No, they don't. They're going to stay. Yeah. They got like an exemption. They're staying.
There's Ryan in room 352.
Come on over.
In. Charger, from the joy.
Jeez, is this game next?
It is. God. It was not.
Did you watch this game at all, Brinson?
Oh, I watched a ton of it.
What was your favorite part? I'll tell you.
My favorite part, Ryan, was
when the kicker faked having a cramp after he missed.
I'll tell you what my favorite part was. It was this.
Oh, he missed. Oh, and he may have pulled a hamstring.
That is classic. But here's the thing.
By the way, we have to get Kevin Harlan on this podcast.
Oh, I want to be there for that. Typically, I don't like to be around for.
I think he would do it.
Well, Mike Golic didn't do it, so hopefully, Kevin Harlan will.
Well, I was DMing with Kevin Harlan the other day because
There it is.
Oh, I complimented his announcing in the NBA bubble because he's freaking great at it.
He's
awesome. He's an awesome announcer.
And now he
sent me a DM and was like, thank you very much. I was like, no problem. And I wanted to be like, you know, we play your voice on the podcast like 12 times a show.
The greatest part of the game is that call right there. But the second greatest part is that Randy Bullock, the kicker, who inexplicably missed that field goal. And Breach, you probably saw these comments, said he literally got a cramp mid kick. It never happened to him before. And he honked it and then he grabbed I don't care if you get shot in the calf mid-kick. You cannot grab your calf after you miss a 31-yard field goal to win the game. You just have to sit there and bleed out. But that's what he did, and they lost. Breach, how did you feel? Okay, so
this clearly, is so tough. It's
clearly
so
the Bengals lost. But we have to back up because A.J. Green arguably got screwed up a touchdown. So, Breach, how did you feel from that call, and how did you feel confidence-wise going into that kick from 31 yards out to tie it?
By the way, before you answer, Breach, I'll point out that this game finished 16-13 Chargers over the Bengals. Chargers covered, of course, the -2.5, snuck through it. The under of 41 was a stone cold lock. Joe Burrow, the 15 points, top fantasy performer. Joshua Kelly, interesting little name and probably a waiver wire ad. But you know, not what you wanted out of Joe Burrow's debut.
You know what, Brinson? It was what I wanted without the win. Like everything except for the win. I'm going to forget the last 10 seconds of this
game.
Joe
Burrow good?
Even happened. Here's I'm going to say three things about this game because if I think too much about it, it's going to make me mad. And then you're going to have to beat Debo's going to have to bleep me out because I'm going to start cussing.
He missed. Oh, and he may have pulled a hamstring or a.
I'm going to pull a hamstring talking about this game. That is what is going to happen. I've literally never heard of anyone having a cramp in their plant leg as they go up to kick a field goal. And what happens to me, he knew he missed it right away. And that's the classic, like, you know, when you're a kid and you get burnt, whether it's on the basketball court or a football game, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm injured. That's what it feels. This is insanity.
I'm muting my mic and laughing. I'm sorry.
So here's what I'll say real quick, though, is number one, the Bengals defense played much better than I thought. The Bengals defense was going to be horrible. I thought they were going to give up 500 yards to the Chargers. I didn't think they were going to be able to stop anything. That, you know, like Keenan Allen didn't do much in this game. There wasn't a ton of offense from the Chargers. So I was impressed.
Chargers were not good.
It's the Chargers. Yeah, you know, like you're making all these excuses for these other teams.
Can we, so instead of using like the dunk, can we like have a separate dunk on for Breach if now it's like.
Oh, he missed. He missed.
If
oh,
I miss a prediction.
Hamstring or-
so Breach, just walk me through the you can talk about what happened with AJ Green. Walk me through the, what you felt then and then the confidence you had in Randy Bullock making that kick to tie it.
All right. So let's set the stage here because the Chargers were up 16-13. The Bengals took over with 3:08 left in the fourth quarter. In my head, I'm thinking Joe Burrow's the man. If he scores a touchdown on this drive, make him the mayor of Cincinnati, make him the governor of Ohio, give him all the government jobs. Let him be the most popular person in the world because that's something that the Bengals franchise needs, the fans need. This would have been a great time for him to come through like something like this. And you know what he did? He drove straight down the field. He drove them straight down the field. I think he threw for about 70 yards. It was like 8 of 9, I think, on the drive. So he couldn't miss. He did his job. I thought the AJ Green call was horse manure.
Which one was worse, Gallup or AJ Green?
Gallup.
I think Gallup was worse. When they showed the replay of Green, it was like, you can't. And he
but
did,
Casey
he
Hayward, like, wrapped around AJ Green first, and Green was, like, trying to get him off. I'm like, hey, man, why are you wrapping around me? And so that's one of those that.
Neither should have been called.
Right. I thought both of them, in both instances, you had the defensive back and the wide receiver jostling with each other, and you don't throw a flag. You either throw two flags, and you offset, and you make them do it over again. If they had done that, I'd be okay with that. But you don't call interference, and certainly not offensive interference in both situations. Like, when's the last time offensive interference got the call at the end of two games in the same week?
Never.
Sanity.
Sunday.
So when they line up in the field.
I mean, so that it happened with 12 seconds on the clock. That never happens.
Well, yeah, it happened on Sunday night as well in the Dallas game. But, yeah, so Breach is going crazy, jumping around, high-fiving his 5-month-old daughter. And then for the first time in her young life, she realizes that she's a Bengals fan because.
And you know what? So as Bullock is lining up for this field goal, I almost tweeted out the most, this is 31 yards. This is a gimme. This is a gimme. I can hit this left-footed. I couldn't hit this left-footed, but it's a gimme. And I almost tweeted out the most Bengals thing ever would be Randy Bullock.
Throw your daughter through the uprights.
Missing. Yes, I wouldn't throw her unless there's a trampoline behind the uprights. Then maybe I would.
Onto a bouncy house, of course. I'm just saying, like, it's not far.
But the point here is, in my head, I thought, my first thought was he's going to miss this.
That's like Rivers got the ball, and I was like, he's going to pick.
Exactly.
You know, it's like,
Randy Bullock is the Philip Rivers of kickers. Now we know. I will say this about Joe Burrow. I thought he played well given the circumstances. He had a terrible pick and he would admit as much, but otherwise I thought he did pretty well. The offensive line, they were getting ragdolled, but I mean, Melvin Ingram, Nick Bosa, Jerry Tillery had a sack. So he didn't have a lot of time.
Brandon Thorne at established a run does offensive line, defensive line mismatches.
Yeah.
This is the number one mismatch on his
show. And it looked like it. Joe Mixon had a terrible fumble. Didn't help either. So I there were a lot of things.
Some bad turnovers. But you know what Zach Taylor did? He didn't keep trying to throw the ball like Doug Peterson when he realized that his offensive line was being outgunned. They did run the ball 28 times.
By the way, Joe, AJ Green said of Joe Burrow on his late game poise, it's unbelievable. That guy don't flinch. The way he handled himself in that last drive was unbelievable. We have a special one of Joe. I tend to agree. Like, I think it's one where if you look at the stats, if you just box score scout, you're not going to be thrilled with Burrow. He's 23-36, 193 yards, no touchdowns and a pick, 66 passer rating. Obviously he ran, you know, he ran 8 times for 46 yards for including that 23 yard touchdown run to get things started with the draw. I mean, like that, like he just has it. He just has it. Now, I don't know if Cincinnati will ruin it for him, and they need to get the offensive line. It has to be better, but you can tell he has it.
You think after that field goal miss, Joe Burrow is like reading his contract, thinking like, can I trade myself to another team? Like, can I not play for the Bengals? I need to call Carson Palmer, see how he got out of Cincinnati.
No, stop it, John. Don't be that guy. Meanwhile, I thought Tyrod Taylor did exactly what we thought Tyrod Taylor was going to do, and they ran the ball a lot, and Anthony Lynn did the anti-Phillip Rivers offense, and it worked, and the defense did a lot of the heavy lifting, and they did it without Derwin James. We'll see how much longer and successfully they're able to do that.
All right, Ravens 38, Browns 6. I mean, we don't have to spend a whole lot of time on this, but the Ravens cover the -7. Obviously, the under actually hit, surprisingly. Lamar Jackson, 33 fantasy points. He dominated again. Mark Andrews, 17 fantasy points. J.K. Dobbins, a pair of touchdowns. Mark Andrews asked after the game about Lamar. To me, he's obviously the best player in the world, and his arm reflects that. Both Ronnie Stanley and Jedrick Willis got injured during this game. It felt a lot like a Charlie Brown situation where you're running up full of optimism about the Browns and the ball gets yanked away. This was taking the Browns plus the points was the stupidest pick I made all week.
You did that?
I mean, yeah.
Devo just put this note in Slack, and I said it about 12 times on HQ on Sunday, revisiting this game. The Ravens have scored 38 points in at least 38 points in the last three week one games. And the Browns are now 16 straight losses in season openers. That's how
not just 16 straight losses. Brinson bet on a team that is one win.
I didn't bet on it. I just picked it for the
one win, 20 losses, and one tie since coming back to the NFL in 1999. That is their opening week record.
And it flies in the face of everything I've been preaching about consistency at quarterback, offensive line, offensive coordinator, and like quarterback. Like what? I mean, like the Browns have no consistency.
So I noticed this.
They're awesome. It's stupid. It was stupid. I regret it.
2 years ago, after Baker's rookie season, we saw a lot of those commercials with him cutting the grass at the Brown Stadium, all that. And then they took a year off when he had a crappy year. Now he's back again doing these commercials. Why don't we wait and see how Baker plays before we start putting him? I don't know why I need to see him on national television doing anything other than completing football. So he didn't play well. Odell Beckham didn't play well. Brinson also. Who's the quarterback? Who's the wide receiver we were talking about? You'd rather have Odell Beckham over? Who was the other one we were talking about?
It was Keenan Allen.
Keenan Allen, exactly. Come on. I mean, yeah, you just made the face there.
Keenan Allen didn't play well either. Odell got hurt, by the way. Marlon Humphrey locked him down. He got hurt. It's fine.
And for people who didn't watch this game, just to put it in perspective, we're talking about how bad the Browns are in openers. In the first quarter alone, they threw an interception, they failed on a fake punt in their own territory, and they missed an extra point. And that interception was on the very first possession. Then, later in the half, they missed a field goal. They had a fumble. It was a total disaster. There was just no way the Browns were winning.
Browns are 7-point favorite to the Bengals on Thursday.
That's unbelievable.
Why, if you just – did Nick Chubb just get paid?
No.
He hasn't gotten paid yet, has he?
No. Kareem Hunt did.
Kareem Hunt did. Why
is Kareem Hunt carry 60 yards? They were behind from Jump Street.
They also faced a 3rd and 41 at one point.
Yeah, that was awesome. I saw that on the Twitter machines.
I mean, it was 24-6 at half. At that point, it's over. The Ravens defensive line was getting after them. The Browns offensive line has improved, but they weren't there. I mean, it was 10-6. Baker kind of kept it close. And then the Ravens shut them out in the second half. The Ravens are awesome. They're loaded on both sides of the ball, and they blew out a crappy Browns team. Plus, the Ravens always dominate in the preseason. Harbaugh never loses. He always covers in the preseason. Why did I think that they weren't going to cover in week one?
I don't know why you thought that. You know how Jameis Winston probably felt some vindication with the way Tom Brady played? Do you think that Freddie Kitchens is somewhere saying, see, I told you, it ain't just me.
Yeah, everybody sucks, right?
Every Browns coach that has lost in week one for the past 20 years was probably like Hugh Jackson.
Who was the one winner?
Chudzinski. They're probably all watching this together. They probably all got together and watched this Browns opener. Like, Kevin's going to join our group because he's probably going to be fired within the next 3 weeks. He's going to be lucky if he makes it through the year.
Eight different coaches are involved in the 16-game winless streak of season openers. 14 different quarterbacks, including 13 different starters, have played during that streak. The last quarterback to win a season opener for the Browns was?
Do you know the year?
2004.
I mean, the quarterback and the coach.
Tim Couchin. It was, what's his face? The guy who coached at Miami.
In Carolina.
Yeah, in Carolina. Him.
Butch Davis.
What'd you say?
Butch Davis is correct. Tim Couch is not.
Oh. Kelly Holcomb? Jeff Garcia.
That's right. Nice work.
And the tie? Do you know who the tie was?
Saints?
It was against the Steelers.
Yeah, I think it was Hugh Jackson against the Steelers a few years
ago. That's right. Oh, that's right. Yeah, then they played the Saints and lost in like that late field goal.
Yeah, that's right. They could have been. Oh, that's right.
It could have been 2-0. That's right. Should have won. And then it said they just won one game in his 2 years. J.K. Dobbins became the first running back in Ravens history with 2+ rushing touchdowns in his rookie debut. Clearly, he's going to be involved in the goal line. I would say this: the rookies very impactful in week one. Surprising.
So, if the neutral field, I guess it doesn't matter. No fans. The Chiefs played the Ravens. Who are you taking right now?
Chiefs.
Ravens. I might take the Ravens.
I might take the Ravens too.
Yeah, well, you guys are taking the wrong team then.
All right.
Seahawks 38, Falcons 25. The Seahawks cover the +1. There's crazy steam on this game. The Falcons were dogs, and everybody was on the Falcons. It got then proceeded to roll back where the Seahawks it steamed to the Seahawks as the Falcons as favorites. The over of 49 hit easily. Russell Wilson 38 fantasy points. Matt Ryan 28 fantasy points. Calvin Ridley 25 and Chris Carson 18. Are the Seahawks finally letting Russ cook?
I love his stat line, 31 to 35. I mean, he had as many touchdowns as he did in completions. That's how good he is. So he had 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. I dropped this stat about 20 times as well. Since 2015, Russ has thrown 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, 9 times, which is the same as Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers, and that's it. That's how good he is. You know, we talk about him not getting any MVP votes, and that's a talking point. He is – probably the most underrated player. We're talking about Robert Woods being the most underrated wide receiver. He's the most underrated player in the NFL, and it's not even close.
Here's a fun fact about Russell Wilson. 31 of 35, all 4 incompletions were thrown when he was targeting DK Metcalf. Yeah. He went 27 of 27 throwing to every other person on the team.
That is fun. And by the way,
Metcalf had a couple drops.
He did. He had one drop.
Big touchdown catch.
Think of your quarterback throwing 4 incompletions and you're responsible for 2 of them because you dropped them. And then the other 2 were if he throws by Russ. But that was it. So Russell Wilson basically had 2 bad throws in this game.
Are the Falcons the worst team in the NFC South?
Yes. Well, maybe not. I'll tell you this. They're going to be points scored in the NFC South. The Falcons defense is not.
Why aren't the Falcons better?
I don't know. Because they cut Laquon Treadwell.
Oh, that's a good point.
I mean, here's the thing, is this was a classic Falcons game. This is like, they shot themselves in the foot. They went for it on 4th down twice, didn't call great plays. They had a fake punt where they converted, and then the guy fumbled it after he got the 1st down, and the Seahawks recovered it. So it was just like, every time they did something, you're like, oh, that's actually not bad. And they're like, oh, wait, no, that didn't work out at all, and now they're going to lose by 30.
They had 3 different receivers with 100-plus yards.
They had over 500 yards of total offense.
And they got smoked. It was never even close.
They're going to score a lot of points and lose a lot of games.
I mean,
Dan Quinn's going to get fired.
You got to make an adjustment.
All Matt Ryan threw 54 times.
You know what? I mean, we talk about Matt Ryan being a really good quarterback. It's important to remember that he was drafted a handful of picks before Joe Flacco. So, and Joe Flacco is washed. And that's no
disrespect. Do you know who the Falcons play next week?
Broncos? No. Ravens?
The Cowboys.
Oh, boy. That means one of them's 0-2.
That means one of them's 0-2, but that also means that game is going to be a shootout.
Well, I mean,
one of those teams can stop anybody.
You want another fun fact?
Sure.
No.
Falcons are 5-0. Straight up and against the spread in week 2 over the past 5 years.
I don't know. I like that stat. I don't know that the Cowboys are going to score a bunch of points. They didn't score any points against the Rams. I mean, look, the fact that at least the Falcons were able to hang some points on a really good Seahawks defense is good, but Cowboys suddenly going to be good?
Where's their line for this game? Let's see
one. Where's the game? In Dallas?
In Dallas. I mean, I think the Falcons can put up points in the Cowboys.
It's going to be -3.5, Dallas. That's my line.
But it's higher than that.
Yeah. All right, what's next?
All right, here it is. I found it. The over's 50?
Yeah.
How is it not getting smashed?
Pound the over. The Falcons are going to score 50.
Yeah, that might happen. I don't know how many.
Cowboys, this is our friends from William Hill. Cowboys are 6.5.
Ooh, I love the Falcons.
Do you say that loud? Do you really love the Falcons?
I probably should think about that. Like Breach, you should think about what you say before you verbalize it.
Look, Seahawks grabbing the Patriots next week, over under 44. If the Seahawks are letting Russ cook, and it remains to be seen if they are actually doing that, then this is a potential game changer, and Russ could be a maniac.
Well, I mean, I don't know. That's not the game you want to move.
But just the threat of letting Russ cook should open things up for Russell Wilson, because now instead of the Seahawks coming to town and you're a defensive coordinator thinking, doesn't matter how good Russ is, because they're just going to stick to their power running in. They're just going to run. But now Russell Wilson throws it 35 times in week one. You have no idea what's going to happen. You don't know if they're going to run or throw it on you.
They're throwing on first down. It makes it like when if you're Russell Wilson and you're Seahawks, you're throwing on first down. It changes everything. Chris Carson's catching multiple touchdown passes. Like all of a sudden, you feel like this team can be a lot more dynamic. Right. Russell was in total command of the game. Pete Carroll said
total command.
We'll be quick on this one. Bills 27, Jets 17. Woo! Jamison Crowder over receptions. Lock it in. The Jets are terrible.
Yes, they are the worst team in football. I feel like they were getting stymied drive after drive to start the game. Josh Allen had two stupid fumbles of his own doing. They ran him so much. I don't know why Josh Allen ran the ball 14 times. You talk about Cam Newton, who didn't take a ton of hits.
Any remotely good team beats the Bills today.
Well, they did a lot of things well. Josh Allen made a lot of good throws. Stephon Diggs was targeted. John Brown had a big game. Cole Beasley played well. Dawson Knox looks like he's going to be good. But I don't know why they kept running him. I watched the first three quarters pretty closely, and he was taking huge hit after huge hit. And these weren't scrambles. These were designed runs. And the only reason the Jets scored right before halftime is because they kept fumbling the ball. The Jets are terrible. The offensive line isn't very good. There are no playmakers. Sam Darnold might be good in a good offense. You just never know. And I don't know how Adam Gase continues to be considered an offense. Of guru.
So the Jets ran on their first five drives. This is incredible. They ran 17 plays for a total of 27 yards, four punts, one first down, and one interception.
I think Le'Veon Bell left with a hammy, but he had six carries for 14 yards. I mean, They are bad.
The Bills defense is really good, but the Jets are really
bad. The Bills could have been up 35-0 at halftime if Josh Allen wasn't being ridiculous. You mentioned how often they were running. He had two absurd fumbles that should have never had. Like these, we're talking like peewee football fumbles where you're a quarterback just running around because you think you're way more athletic than everybody else. And then you just like someone pops the ball out because you're carrying it like a sack of bread.
He also missed.
And it happened twice.
He missed like some of these throws.
Brown, he was wide open in the end zone once in the second half. Knox,
there's no one within like 30 yards of him. And I'm texting Prisco's of Josh Allenheimer. We're texting him. They're like, dude, come on. He asked me. He's like, he's rolling left. It's a tough throw. Make that throw.
I just saw Debo's note. Let's go.
We're done with this game. Raiders 34, Panthers 20. This is the last game. It's a fun game. Raiders cover the -3. Boo. It's 34-30, actually, I think, right? 34-30. There it is. Finally, a mistake by Debo. 34-30. Raiders over the Panthers. Over the 48 cast. He's a lead. The Panthers are going to cash a lot of overs this week, kids.
Was Prisco peacocking about that? That was his lock of the week, the over in the Panthers Raiders.
Mine too. I loved it. Josh Jacobs, 31 points in fantasy. Christian McCaffrey, 24. Teddy Bridgewater, 18. Robbie Anderson, 17. Derek Carr, 15. Panthers offense looked good. Not great, but it looked good. Both of these teams are bad on defense. I watched this whole game. Both of these teams are terrible on defense. Both are going to be intriguing on offense. You want to buy Panthers overs. Bet the Panthers over when it comes out. Go bet it right now. It's like 47 against the Buccaneers. That was good. They're going to crush that.
I watched a little bit of this game. My only takeaway is John Gruden's hair was awesome when he took his hat off.
Gruden, by the way, said of Josh Jacobs, a little bit like Walter Payton used to play, hot as hell. He got beat up pretty early. Insisted on come back and insisted on getting the ball as a runner and receiver. He is special. He deserves some national attention, and I hope you give it to him. You know what that means? Gruden is going to feed Josh Jacobs. You want to play Josh Jacobs in DFS. I didn't play him this week. That was a mistake. He is going to have another big game next week. I almost guarantee it.
Yeah, he was fun to watch.
I just can't believe the Panthers had a 4th-and-1 at the end of this game with under 2 minutes left and did not give the ball to Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, who was it they gave it to that got stuffed?
Not Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Is it fullback? I don't know. All right, let's do some winners and losers. I'll start. My winner of the week, Ryan Pace.
I can say Ryan Wilson.
Oh. Ryan Pace gets to give Mitchell Trubisky a franchise tag and or a monster contract. If he keeps it up, he's going to keep – Trubisky wasn't good, but he keeps people off his back. I would also accept Kyler Murray as the winner. Or actually, you know what? I'll pivot. I'll say DeAndre Hopkins. Because Hopkins is on a tweet spree, stuffing it, dunking all over Bill O'Brien, tweeting hashtag grateful. He's like quote tweeting stats he has and like quote tweeting how the Texans lose. It's pretty fun. How about you, Wilson?
My winner is one Aaron Rodgers, who allowed Pete Prisco to peacock all over Fort Lauderdale on Sunday and probably all the way till next week or till the next time that Aaron Rodgers doesn't play well. So great job, Aaron Rodgers, sticking it to all the haters and the Vikings, and we'll see how long it lasts.
My winner is Gardner Minshew, someone who wears jorts during the summer and likes to grow mustaches. We have a lot in common, so I thought it was only made sense to name him my winner. But also, let's not forget, back in April, Leonard Fournette was out there tweeting, can we sign Cam Newton so we can get rid of my trash quarterback that's on my team? And what the Jags do instead? They got rid of Leonard Fournette. They kept Gardner Minshew. And all he did today, like we mentioned, 19 to 20, 173 yards, 3 touchdown passes, one of the biggest upsets of the day. Jacksonville is supposed to be tanking. Gardner Minshew doesn't tank unless he's driving an actual tank. So he is my winner.
All right, my loser, Phillip Rivers.
That's pretty good.
Same game.
Same game, but yeah. I mean,
my loser, the Lions.
Me.
My loser, every professional football franchise in the state of Ohio. It's depressing.
Yeah. No Ohio State. To top it off, you have to watch the Browns and the Bengals all year.
Imagine that.
They might be coming back. We'll find out this week, maybe.
Please.
What if that's part of the argument to bring them back? They're like, look, you know what the fans in Ohio are suffering right now? They're stuck watching the Browns and Bengals, and now these two teams are playing each other on Thursday. Just bring Ohio – show some mercy. Bring the Buckeyes back.
Do you think Randy Bullock would get a scholarship to play at Ohio State right now?
No, he wouldn't.
Okay.
Oh, he missed. He missed. Oh, and he may have pulled a hamstring.
Great.
Muscle, and there is complete elation.
Oh, man.
That is my favorite part.
He missed.
The he missed isn't my favorite part. The, oh, he might have pulled a hamstring. Like, a kicker got magically injured after he missed a muscle.
Harlan knew as he was saying that.
He absolutely.
That guy's faking.
There's a drunk guy on the field. All right, let's get out of here. It's a 2-hour podcast to kick off week one. I'm going to fall asleep sitting up in my chair. If you want to see us fall asleep in our chairs, go to youtube.com/pick6. Thanks for listening. Talk to you guys tomorrow.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.